It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. We're going to talk about the latest news from Microsoft, including the, what did they call it, Fall Creators Update? It's almost here. Just in the nick of time, everybody else got the Spring Creators Update. Well, most of you anyway. Also, Paul shows us pictures of ham because he's in Barcelona. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 529, recorded Wednesday, August 2nd, 2017. Things to do while you're eating ham. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. Today from Barcelona, it's Paul Thurrott on his yearly hijira to the land of Jamón Ibérico.
The biblioteca, as we call it here.
Yeah. Those aren't, this is the fun thing. Those are, none of those are Paul's books.
No.
They're just the guy.
No, there is a decided lack of Paul's books here. I should fix that.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a very bookish show. Paul is joined, of course, by, as always, by Mary Jo Foley, who is also in her library.
Yep.
So, nice. Very nice. Welcome, both of you. Paul and Mary Jo are respectively at Thurrott.com and allaboutmicrosoft.com. I'm going to have to change your lower third to mention Barcelona.
That's right. Yes.
In fact, when you come back, we won't be saying Dedham anymore. We'll be saying Emmaus. Right?
Yeah, that's true. I will never do another episode from Dedham again.
What?
That is
right.
Oh, yep. My goodness.
You packed it all up. I saw your picture.
Yeah, there was nothing in
last
your
thing
office
to go was the Xbox. As I told Brad, again, I'm sorry I mentioned his name, but the last, as I mentioned to Brad right
did you
before
say,
I left,
did
I said,
you say Brad?
You can tell I'm serious about moving because I packed the Xbox.
That is serious. You're never going back.
Yep, that's a one-way trip.
That's a one-way trip to paradise. You know what else is never going back? The Creator's Update.
Yes.
My Windows 10.
It's only going forward.
It's only going forward, never going back.
That's right. That's Windows as a service in a nutshell. Just look it forward is. And damn the torpedoes.
It's kind of funny because we're like imminently, we're going to get the next version, right? But they finally kind
actually
of updated
that's something it. That's something I'd like to discuss, and I think Mary Jo has some information on that. But before that, let's why don't we just talk about
let's
what
hit the
Microsoft
creators update.
So Microsoft, it was last week, right? Yeah, end of last week, said that Windows Creators Update is fully available.
So
what they mean is the Spring Creators Update, the thing that started rolling out in April, also known as 1703. The 03 is the RTM date. I'm using those words, not them. And so they're claiming now that it's no longer being staged or staggered, and anybody and everybody is getting it now, and that's it, which isn't true.
Yeah,
because
there's
know.
People in our chat room who haven't gotten it. So have you gotten it on your Spectre yet, Mary Jo? Did you get it?
I did. I got it on the Spectre.
Okay.
So I went back and asked them when they did this blog post last week. I said, so, you know, like a lot of people still don't have this. I talk to them every day and they ask me why they don't have it. And I got a statement from them saying that a small number of devices, their favorite words these days, do not have it yet. But Microsoft's working on trying to get it out to everyone. And they're continuing to investigate and trying to find solutions to get these devices on the Creators Update. So if you don't have it, they haven't given up on you yet, totally.
You're not a linguist, but if you were to define the word fully off the top of your head, how would you define the word? Would it mean everybody?
Everyone. Yeah, I would. Yeah.
Would we call it the fully asterisk available creators update?
I think that's what it should be. Yeah. But I want people to know if you don't have it yet, it does not mean for sure that you will never get it. You know, a lot of people were immediately thinking about the situation that we just had with Clover Trail. And they're like, oh, so if I don't have it, that's it, right? I'm not going to get it. And it does not mean that at this point.
That is amazing. So, by the way, I never thought of that angle. And that's actually very interesting because you and I and Leo here on the show, we've talked a lot about Microsoft's inability to communicate.
Thanks for including me, Paul.
Well, right. I mean, they're terrible at it. No, I mean, they've given us careers. I mean, and you know, non-facetiously, thank you. I mean, your inability to communicate anything effectively is beautiful, Microsoft.
I hear Scaramucci's available. Maybe they are.
Right. Can I get a Fandango?
Mark Penn is too, but yeah.
I like Mark. But anyway, the point is.
You know, in fact, we've had Chris Cappicella on the show.
Their
CMO, right?
I mean, Chief Marketing Officer. Right? That's true. We're good friends with Frank Shaw, their chief head of communications. Yeah. You know?
So what
he
is
was
this?
On our show.
Yeah.
Well, we got to remember, Microsoft is a big company, and there are lots of parts to Microsoft. And so primarily we deal with the Windows group, and I would say they are uniquely unable to communicate effectively. They're kind of hilarious in that way. And, you're right. What you just said is amazing. Microsoft comes out and says the Creators Update is fully available. And now here you are, a normal person, and you don't have the Creators Update. What does that mean? It sounds like Microsoft has said, look, everyone has it. So if you don't have it, you're not getting it. It's fully available. That's what that sounds like.
It does.
I'm embarrassed. I didn't think of that.
They claim it is not what they meant to say. So.
But they said it.
I know.
They used it in the headline.
I'm not apologizing for them. Yeah. All right. Yeah, but I did go back and ask them because inevitably, every morning starts with, why don't I have the Creators Update yet, Mary Jo?
Yeah.
And I'm always like, yep, I don't know.
But and as Leo just hinted at, here we are. It's August.
Right.
Any day now, not that they'll ever say this, but any day now, they will RTM the fall Creators Update. In fact, surprise, it might have already happened and we don't even know.
Right.
Because they don't really say it anymore.
I know.
Not publicly, although they really do it.
You saw Donna's tweet to someone today?
Did
you see this? So somebody on Twitter said to her, well, when we get the build that becomes the release build, in quotes, will you guys make a prominent announcement that this is RTM, please? And she said, yes.
Okay, but before you say that, they've never done that.
I don't think she totally either thought through what he was asking, or it's a change in policy, which would be very welcome.
I sort of heard what you said, but I think what you said was she said yes.
She did.
Okay, so just to be clear,
the word yes with an exclamation point.
there are now four versions of Windows 10, five including the Fall Creators Update, but let's say four. They have never done that, not once, not ever. In fact, when we have gone to them and said this is it, right? And they've been like, well, we don't really think of it that way, you know. But of course they do. So here's the problem. Yes, it's one word answer. That's beautiful. here's the thing. We have talked in the past, if you are a Windows insider, that there is, I call it kind of a magic window of time, where all of a sudden the fast ring coalesces with the shipping version of Windows 10. And for that little period of time, it's usually a couple of days, a week, 9 days, mm-hmm. something like that. Those two things are the same thing. And during that magic window, you can do things like leave the Insider program with no ramifications whatsoever. Because now you're just on the shipping version of Windows 10.
Right.
And that's actually important, because if you've been testing Windows 10, some version of Windows 10, the Fall Creators Update, let's say, you may want to get off of that train and move to a non-pre-release ring. For Windows 10, you might want to get on the production ring. You can do it, but they never say when it starts,
right?
And they never say when it ends. So once they RTM Windows, which has always happened in secret for Windows 10, you have a little period of time where you can switch back and forth, no problems. Mm-hmm. But then one day, they will come up with the next Insider build. And there's no warning that it's coming.
Yeah.
You know, by the way, Insiders, be ready tomorrow, maybe, or maybe the next day after that, we're going to release a new build. So if you want to go back to production, this is the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I actually think this is very important. It's almost like effectively communicating is important. I'm surprised they never got this message.
You know, but you understand why they don't want to do it, right? Like, the whole premise of Windows as a service is pretending it's never done and it's always a product
well,
in
constant iteration. By the way, even if you buy into that, that's fine. But they've sort of, you know, graded it down so that there are different rings or, you know, channels, right, or whatever you want to call them. And I think it is it's just respectful for people who are testing the thing.
I know.
To say, look, this is the one, you know, we may increment it to point something, but this is the build.
I know.
If you want to get off of this insider train, do it today.
Yeah.
Because tomorrow or next Tuesday.
Yeah.
Right.
I thought last week they were going to do this because they came out with an insider build last week, 16251. And that same day they came out with it, they also had, we talked about it, Kevin Gallo talking about the SDK for Windows 10 Fall Creators. And he said platform complete / feature complete. Like he said the SDK is feature complete. So I went back to Microsoft and I said, so can we say now that the build is feature complete? And they said, we won't say that.
It's not the same thing. So just to be fair to Microsoft on this.
No, it's not the same thing. Right. I know.
You may not be even aware that it's not just Microsoft that does this. So Android, the next version of Android became feature complete. I'm sorry, SDK, let's call it SDK complete.
SDK complete.
In other words, features for developer complete.
Yeah.
I want to say a couple of months ago. I don't remember exactly, but it's 30 days ago, possibly more than 30 days ago. Since then, they released a build coincidental to that for testers, non-developer testers. Well, actually, they're supposed to be developers, but anybody could do it. And then very recently, they released another build of the next version of Android. But the SDK has not been incremented. It's not. That thing is feature complete. And so that kind of makes sense when you think about it, right?
Okay.
Because there's the core kind of foundation features for developers, and then there are the end user applications that may need updating after the the core part.
Yeah, you're right.
Done.
No, I understand. That's a great point. And Donna is basically hinting that today there is going to be another insider build for Fall Creators update. Right. So but we also do know they do designate a build that's a little bit older usually as RTM, right? So it may not be the latest insider build that they call RTM. They pick a build before that usually, right?
And because of the world that we live in today, it's even a little more complicated because we have apps as well. And so the core OS always gets incremented. And so, some build will be the final version, even though they refuse to use that terminology. If you buy a computer that comes preloaded with the Fall Creators update, it could be whatever build. But as soon as you run it for the first time, you're going to get the cumulative update that will give you the additional stuff. You're also going to be able to go into the store, or it will happen automatically if you wait long enough, and get updated versions of the apps. And those things could be considerably different because that happens all the time.
Right, right. So, that's where we're at with the Spring Creators update. Oh, and the other thing about it is last week Microsoft designated it ready for businesses. So they used to call this current branch for business. That was the old lingo for that. And when you heard they designated something current branch for business, it meant, okay, now if you're a business and you've been waiting for it to be fully tested by consumers and other, I don't want to use the word guinea pigs, but I will, that you are now safe to deploy it. And so last week they said, okay, Spring Creators update is now at the CBB stage, but they're not using CBB anymore. They're using a new term. Semi-annual channel is the new term. And the reason they're using this term is they're trying to consolidate the terminology they're using with Office and Windows, Office Pro Plus and Windows.
Yep.
So Office has been using this semi-annual channel designation to talk about their build candidates. So now Microsoft's going to use it. What they're not going to do, though, which they had kind of hinted in April that they were going to do, they were thinking about saying semi-annual channel pilot and semi-annual channel broad to designate CB and CBB. God. But they did not do that. Instead, they're calling everything semi-annual channel and no pilot and no broad.
And then the long-term servicing branch becomes the long-term servicing channel.
I think. So LTSB is now LTSC.
Can I say one thing?
Please do. I have a question.
This is freaking pathological.
Thank you. By the way, thank you.
And I don't mean on Microsoft's part. I just mean...
I know.
No, it's
a little bit like monks debating how many angels could dance on the head of a pin. Just, It doesn't feel like, yeah. Like, I know. Don't you guys have better things to do?
By the way, their post about this and in their discussions about this, they you are completely right.
Okay.
They always talk about how they do these things to make things simpler. Yeah. It's like, guys, you have 127 different things going on here. This is not simpler.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, the long-term servicing branch or channel, whatever we're calling it now, just to put this in perspective, is what Windows used to be. A new version of Windows every 2 to 3 years. Mm. Period. Yeah. You know, like this is, yes.
Yeah.
To be fair, the reason that we obsess about this is because everybody else is. I mean, I'm looking at Donna Sakar's tweet stream, and they wished.
Oh, and it must be a
fan.
A litany of.
Well, she
stupidity.
And Gabe Ball are. The most recent post is she and Gabe Ball with a picture of a birthday mm-hmm. cake for a 16-year-old Windows Insider. You know, it's really cute. Happy 16th birthday to Callum and everything. And then the thread following it is, 16. I wonder if that has anything to do. I bet many of us are looking for build numbers. Let's see. Some calculations. Let's see. So clearly there is an obsessive, compulsive thing going on with these numbers.
Right. There is a goofy weirdness to what's happening now with the Insider program where you kind of wonder if we could just kind of get back on track and just test Windows and not have little secrets and goofy little pictures to find clues in. And
well, I don't think was Donna and Gabe's intent with their tweet at
no,
all.
No, it wasn't. But the problem is they've done it in the past. So now every time they post a photo, it's like, let's investigate the frosting of the cake to see if there's a clue about the next build number.
I did. As soon as I saw the picture of the cake, I'm like, okay, where's the build number?
For all we know, it is there. We just haven't spotted it yet.
No, but but honestly, I mean, it's a little much, you know. But I guess more on point, I was going to ask you, Leo, because I think you might know this, and I just don't. The way they service something like Ubuntu Linux, they have, I want to say, twice yearly releases for the general public.
They have a very
public.
Regular release.
But then they have a long-term servicing version as well.
Right.
And
they have one major number per year and two minor numbers, 4 and 10, for April and October. And you kind of have to do that in an open source project because you have all these contributors. So you have somebody who runs the project who's going to say at some point, okay, that's it. We're releasing this one.
This is the thing.
And everybody knows when that's going to be. So that's just herding cats, I think. But it does, from the point of view of the user, it's very straightforward. You know, 16.10 is the LTS version. The even numbers of the LTS version. 17, 4, and 10 will not be LTS.
So the even version, you mean every 2 years?
Every 2 years they do a long-term support version.
Okay, by the way, that makes way more sense than what the Windows does. And yet I have to – no, seriously, it really does. And I have to think that this is the model they were shooting for, that they couldn't emulate it exactly. They have this, I think, a misguided commitment to Windows as a service, and we're, you know, damn the torpedoes. Like I said, we're going to update this thing. But I think it ignores two basic facts. One, that this legacy code base can't sustain this. And two, the majority of the people that run this operating system, i.e. businesses, have zero interest in upgrading Windows this often. And they never have, and they never will. And it's a kind of a bizarre bit of cluelessness, I think, on their part to misunderstand both their own operating system and their own customers to that dramatic of a fashion. It's a huge problem.
Well, I think it has to do with the fact that Windows is meant to be both a consumer and a business operating system. And I think it would be easier if it was something like, okay, if you're a business, run this version. If you're a consumer, run this version. Consumer, we're going to just keep revving it all the time, and you're going to be happy just like you are on your phone, right? And businesses, we're only going to update this every 2 years, and here you go. Here's the code.
We have all these examples out in the world of how things are done. In the mobile world, we know that Apple and Google update their mobile platforms once a year, right? These are newer and less complex systems than Dedham. Hello.
What?
I'm looking at.
Are you glitching, sorry. Paul?
Yep. Yep. I did have Havana Club earlier today. than Windows. And why would Windows need to be updated? Why would Windows, the 30-year-old operating system, why would this thing need to be updated so often? Well, there were other desktop operating systems we could look at as well. Mac OS is updated once a year. Once a year.
Yeah.
It's all it needs.
Well, but honestly be fair, all of the obsessive fanboy stuff goes into the iPhone rumor mill and not into the Mac OS releases. There is something about this
That makes
technology
sense.
Community. We're fascinated. We love. And updates in particular, even though you may look at the update and go, well, okay, it's not – it's something new. I just want my – there's a pony in here somewhere.
This would still work. It would still be fine. If they took 1 year to develop every version of Windows, they could still beta test apps, which would be updated on whatever schedule they're on, and Core OS features, which would happen once a year. You know, the thing you said about Ubuntu, I think you said that the April update was minor and the October update was major, I think, or vice versa, whatever it was. We're in March and September because we're nothing like Ubuntu, by the way. But both of those things are just they're just releases. And in the scope of Windows updates, when you have regularly scheduled cumulative updates every month and some other update every month, which we don't really talk about, although we'll talk about that later today, those twice a year feature updates are both major updates. And I just don't think it's sustainable.
But Ubuntu Artful Aardvark will be very exciting.
Because?
Because they have a cute name. It's also because we've turned over the odometer.
We're going back to GNOME.
We're going back to A. Yeah, we had Yakety Yak, Wily Werewolf, Vivid Vervet.
I see what you're saying. You've gone past 26.
Yeah, we've rolled it over. Yeah. So now we're back to AA.
Is that what they're doing? So it's going to be BBCC.
AABBCC,
That won't get tedious. Well,
it's been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
The current version is Zesty Zappos.
That's great. Oh, you know what? Makes more sense than the fall creators update.
I know. Eliminates a lot of that autumn fall stuff.
Yeah. And you know what? Let's go back to businesses. Because, again, like Paul said, businesses are the major customer of Windows, right? So. Yep. If you're a business, you're probably not going to deploy all of these feature updates all the time, is my guess, even though that's what Microsoft would like you to do. You're going to do that deferred thing where you can defer for 18 months or whatever it is now, right? And you're going to do as these feature updates as possible.
The problem with Microsoft has always been that This is true in many businesses and markets and so forth, but the customers who pay the most get the most flexibility, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the people who are on enterprise plans, they can delay feature updates forever, basically. I mean, they're on it's the old system. And I don't like the inference there that if you're a smaller business and like a medium-sized business, I don't remember exactly how they quantify these things, but I have, 1,500 employees. It's like, well, sorry, you're not an enterprise. You're going to have to update this thing every 18 months at the slowest. Right. We'd really prefer you to update it twice a year.
Yeah.
That's really aggressive.
I know. Yeah.
And unfair. Because these are the businesses that don't have the IT staff needed to handle this kind of work in the first place. Yeah. And so you're basically just trusting to Microsoft that this is going to happen. And so maybe down the road there's some – I don't know, whether it's Microsoft 365 or Windows 10 is kind of thrown into the mix, and now you get to take advantage of some kind of management, deployment, whatever functionality that was previously the purview only of the enterprise becomes available to you as a smaller company, and they kind of democratize that. That will be okay, but today I just use the word, the phrase guinea pig. I mean, it's not just individuals who are guinea pigs, ultimately. It's also these businesses that can't afford to pay.
Yeah. I think it's what you're saying is what we hear every day on Twitter. Like the day this whole new naming system came out, I was being hit by tons of people on Twitter saying, I hate this. I'm a business owner. I don't want this. Is there any way I can shut this off? And I'm like, yep, you can't really. I mean, a lot of businesses went to the long-term servicing branch/channel, even though Microsoft didn't want them to use it this way, just to avoid having to take the updates, right? And so it's definitely a problem. Microsoft, I think, is thinking that people are just going to get used to it over time. I don't think they're going to change the policy. I think they are assuming, just like they are with chips these days, by the way, that being, you know, they want to keep you on the most current everything, most current chip, most current release of the software, most current release of the apps. And they claim they have telemetry that shows people who are on the most current releases of everything are the happy customers. People who are on the older releases are unhappy because they can't take advantage of features. I'm not, again, saying I believe it or don't believe it. I'm saying this is their argument, right?
This is theory versus reality. theoretically, being on the latest version is always the best. In reality, not having to put users through that upgrade and having things just kind of work.
Yeah.
Works, you know?
Right. And by the way, back to the naming, Taro Alhonen just reminded me, there is still a current branch versus current branch for business designation. I forgot this. Current branch is called semi-annual channel targeted. Current branch for business is just called semi-annual channel. Yeah.
Try not to gouge your eyes with a pencil.
I know. So, and the new guidance around this to businesses is, so businesses, when we first release a new feature version of Windows, we would suggest that you have some people in your organizations immediately start piloting it as soon as it comes out. So when Creators Update came out in April, you should start piloting this in a small self-contained place. And then when we give you the white flag, all clear, then bring everybody onto the new release.
The white flag is the right term, by the way, because it is at that point that you're basically like giving surrendering. Up. Yeah, exactly.
I should have said the checkered flag, the update. Right?
Yeah, exactly. It should be a white flag in the UI. That's right. That should be how it works.
And right now, this is hilarious. Right now, as we are doing Windows Weekly, I'm watching on Twitter a whole battle happening with people trying to get Microsoft to agree to designate something RTM because it'll make things clearer. And Microsoft representatives saying, no, that's not how we're going to do it. So, yeah.
I love this company. Love them.
So I would say your takeaway from all this, if you're listening to the show right now, is that there are new terms that Microsoft's going to be using, the semi-annual channel stuff, long-term servicing channel stuff, and we don't know if it'll change again, but that's where we are going into it now.
You know what this reminds me of is back in the day. some new version of Windows would come out, Windows NT4, Windows 2000, Windows XP, whatever it was. And they would just kind of move stuff around in the start menu. People had muscle memory about where they had to go. Remember, they used to have those kind of menus that would open off the start menu. And they would remember where things were, and then those things would be gone. And they'd be somewhere else. So, you know, people would write me, and I'm sure they wrote you at the time too. Hey, I found it. Whatever it was, remote desktop access.
Here it is.
I found it. But, I mean, why would they move that? And there is no answer to that question. You know, why do these things need new names? Yeah. I don't know. It's like they're trying to keep us on our toes.
I think I get why they did it. They are trying to align Office and Windows. But I kind of feel like maybe they should have picked the Windows names and made Office change.
Yes. It might be an indication of how much these product lines matter to the company respectively in a way.
Sure.
I mean, Office 365 is in some ways the future.
Sure.
You know, Windows is in some ways the past.
Sure. Yep. Office Weekly, the new name of the show.
Yes.
Nope.
Today's PowerPoint tip of the week.
However, Windows 10 will get eye tracking functionality.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's for accessibility purposes, right?
It is.
That's right.
Okay.
Right.
That's cool.
Though, I didn't realize this, so I'm sure you guys both did, that eye tracking is big in gaming and that a number of gaming PCs and monitors already have eye tracking in them for gaming purposes.
Really?
Actually, I was not super aware of that, no.
Yeah.
I think of eye tracking, I always think of that 1980 movie Looker.
Right.
Where they, in the movie, they created a technology that would follow where your eyes were in an ad. And it would help them target.
We know that. We have that. It's called heat mapping. We know it already. Mm-hmm. But gaming, I don't, Paul, I don't think that would be a good interface for Call of Duty.
No.
You look at a guy and it blows him up? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what point would the game serve knowing what I was looking at, I guess?
Yeah.
Here you go. Here's an explanation from Dean Takahashi on VentureBeat about this, who covers gaming really well. He said, I've used eye tracking to control a targeting reticle.
Reticle.
Is that a word? Reticle.
Yeah,
in
so that's
games.
Your crosshairs, basically. Your
okay.
Reticle.
And to throw knives at zombies more quickly.
You okay?
Hey, Dean, go for it.
No, it's getting interesting now. I get it.
Yep. Okay.
So the reticle tracks your eyes, and then you still, of course, have the fire.
And so it's pointed
you
in the right
have
direction.
Movement and fire on the controller.
So this is a little bit like I think it was Call of Duty 3. It came out on the Nintendo Wii, and you could use the little nunchuck controller to throw grenades with it.
Right.
And so it was kind of a natural user interface, we might call it. And so, you could use a reticle.
That sounds kind of cool. Now I want it.
Yeah.
I need a reticle. I'm looking at you.
Yeah. I never heard the word reticle until today.
Well, yeah, so the point behind a reticle is you can move differently than you're looking. And so if you kind of picture that you're pointing your character down the road straight, but you're looking off to the right. And so even though you're moving straight, the reticle is over here. You know, like a tank might have a gun pointed to the right, even though it's driving straight.
Good to know.
If you played Call of Duty, these things would be obvious.
I know. Well, what Microsoft's going to do with
everybody knows that a reticle is a small handbag
pouch,
similar to a modern evening bag, used mainly from 1795 to 1820.
Oh, from the French reticule.
So, Dean is a very literate first person. I.
He is.
Oh, wait a minute.
Is.
For crosshairs, see this reticle. Oh, there we go.
For crosshairs.
For crosshairs. Yeah. People who, have been snipers in an earlier life know about this. Yeah.
You got to keep that peripheral vision going.
Absolutely. Yep.
All right. Well, here's what Microsoft's doing with it, guys.
What are they doing?
Back to reality.
We got excited. Sorry.
Step away from the reticle and let's talk
right
about
back on
eye
track.
Control.
Yep.
Eye control is going to be built into some version of Windows 10. It's not clear if it's the fall creators update, even though the bits are in the insider builds now. It might be out in beta form is what I've been hearing when fall creators update comes out. But this is for people who have things like Steve Gleason had. He had ALS, right? And so he cannot use his hands or other common ways of inputting on keyboards and mice. So they developed this wheelchair eye control thing for him as part of a one-week hackathon at Microsoft back in 2014. Then they took that technology and they built it up so that it could be built into Windows, which is pretty cool.
You can use
your eyes to control the cursor on a screen with this technology, and Microsoft is definitely targeting it for the immediate term at people who have issues using their hands to do input.
Yeah.
So
I don't know if it requires special hardware.
It does.
Or if it's something you can just basically, I assume it does.
Right. So right now it's only compatible with one eye tracker, which is from Tobii, which is a company in Sweden. But they are saying they're going to make it compatible with other eye trackers as well going forward. It's very interesting. It's not a feature, obviously, for everyone, but immediately when people heard about this, I saw a lot of people immediately jumping to the conclusion, oh, they're doing this for gaming, right?
No.
Maybe at some point they will use it for gaming too, but not immediately.
Yeah, no,
it'll be in the Kinect 2.0.
Microsoft's I really commend them for their attention to accessibility. They work very hard on that.
They've definitely stepped that up in the past couple of years, for sure.
And actually, even more generally, I would say using technology to do good. Microsoft has a lot of initiatives within the company to do this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, we kind of joke about Microsoft to make fun of Microsoft as required. But actually, they have a really nice kind of vibe around that kind of stuff. I mean, it's actually really commendable.
Yeah. Speaking of commendable...
Are we going back to Denim 365? Because I still think that should be a thing.
Let's go to Denim. Microsoft's selling mixed reality headsets online. These are those third-party ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Brad Sams wrote about this in
Yeah, because I fly to Barcelona, and then they made like 17 announcements yesterday. It's like, hey, Thorat's in Barcelona. What can we do?
What can we do? Quick.
Ready? Go.
Go. So anything to say
about
that?
I want to say the Game Developers Conference in probably March. They announced that developers would be able to buy mixed reality headsets from at least a couple of companies sometime by the end of the summer. And that's what's available now. And so these are really aimed at. I mean, anyone could buy one. The problem is you'd have to join the Insider program to find any kind of mixed reality functionality in Windows. Well, yeah, no, you would. So the foundational stuff was built into the Creators Update. And then the Fall Creators Update finally has, I think, some of the end user stuff. But the Acer headset is available for $300. The HP version is available for $329. It's pre-order, right? So you can buy these things, I assume, from the Microsoft store. I didn't even look at it, but yeah, it looks like it's the Microsoft store. And they're not coming tomorrow. Like, they're going to come later in August. So I think it's time to coincide with the release of the Fall Creators Update and kind of get on board with that stuff early if you're a developer, because, you know, the developer tools obviously offer some way to do emulation and whatever, but what you really need to make sure this works is, you know, the headset. And so this will give you that.
Cool.
And I saw people saying yesterday their credit cards are being charged, which makes me think it's
that means they're on their
shipping.
Way. Yeah.
Oh, could be shipping. Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Don't trust them. But yeah, sure. No, probably true.
So Acer makes one for $300 and there's an HP model for $329. I don't know if there's any difference.
I think technically they're pretty close. Yeah. You know, I think the resolution's the same on both, et cetera.
Yeah, so. According to this Brad Sams fellow.
Yeah, he's not trustworthy either.
Neowen wrote about this too, and they were talking about the high specs that you need to use the developer edition of these headsets. And, you know, no PCs will work with it. But again, that's the developer edition. So by the time this is ready to ship, this holiday, I believe, is still the target to end users. This, I would assume, the specs required to work with this will go down.
Yeah. So, what were the specs? Off the top of my head, I don't remember exactly. But
yeah, look for Neowen's story.
Yeah. I want to say they were fairly mid-level PC kind of things, and so
they were kind of on the high end. I thought pretty.
Oh,
high
were
end.
They? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, for the final version. No.
Oh, for the final.
I thought it was going to be mainstream PCs because the goal was to have a range of headsets at different prices. Although I think they're all going to be about $100 difference at most, and then also run on a variety of PC types. And then the experience would vary depending on whether you had, you know, dedicated graphics, lots of RAM, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, hopefully this gets better than it is now. He said it's about everything, basically.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. I'm like, that's the tagline for every story, pretty much.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Today it's terrible, but hopefully it gets better.
It's going to get better.
You know what's better? If you want Windows 10S, now you can download it. But you still can't. Now, can you put this on your everyday PC? Or
depends.
It's intended for schools to test before, try before they buy, right?
Actually, it's primarily developers at this point, although schools are coming as well. So it's not just any developers, though. It's developers who are paying for an MSDN subscription, which is actually fairly expensive.
Okay.
Although, did you see yesterday? I saw somebody saying you can actually download it now to any PC because they've put an installer up. So anybody could test it, I believe.
Okay, that's interesting. So my understanding is that this won't actually run well on any PC. I thought there was maybe it was the MSDN thing, but I thought at the time there was a list of PCs that they were known to work.
Okay. The lesser version of Windows doesn't run as well as the Windows Pro.
Yep. So,
but the funny part about that, right? You know why that's weird? Just hearing that.
Yes.
Windows 10S is, they call it a mode of Windows 10 Pro. Like, it really is Windows 10 Pro, right?
Yeah, it would actually be more accurate to call Windows 10 Pro a mode of Windows 10S because it enables what it does is unblock the ability to run third party what Microsoft calls non-verified desktop applications.
Right.
Windows 10S and Windows 10 Pro are actually the same thing. It's just that Windows 10 has this one little thing built into it that prevents you from doing stuff. It's not that the code isn't there to run those apps. Of course it is. you're running right. Paint and WordPad and Internet
Notepad.
Explorer, I think, whatever. Yeah, Notepad. You know, whatever. These things are Win32 apps. Like, that stuff works. You know, of course it does. And they've kind of manually curated it in a sense to determine what will and will not be supported. Like, they don't have Hyper-V in there. They don't have the Windows subsystem for Linux and so forth. PowerShell, I think, is missing and that kind of thing. So Windows 10S is like this. It really is the bane of my existence. I'm probably going to go to my grave writing about why it's wrong. But anyway.
And you know what? Can I just say what's ironic about you just saying that statement? Remember when we first heard rumors they were going to do this? You were so jazzed about it.
Because
do you remember that?
Here's why. Okay, yes, I do. I referred to it as the future of Windows.
You did.
And it is the future of Windows if they get it right. And the problem is they've gotten it wrong because where we are today is in a transition period. You know, I cynically, Windows 10S is an incredible invention because it's the first version of Windows that can't run Windows applications. Well, actually, it's the second.
Right.
Like, that itself is ludicrous, you know? So yeah. I think a better transition is to say, look, we want to get to this place where this stuff, Win32.net, whatever, becomes deprecated. And then we want to get to this place where we can actually just not do that, right? But the truth is Windows is built on those technologies. That stuff actually never goes away. Even things like Windows Mobile has some of that DNA, if you will, built into it. Like, it's still in there, kind of. It's running on this other platform or whatever, but it's not that they can run desktop apps, but a lot of the foundational stuff is just based on the same exact technology. It doesn't ever really go away.
Right. There are Win32 apps in APIs in UWP, right?
Right, of course. In fact, that's what they're calling underneath. It's a thing on a thing. You know, it's kind of like what Windows has always been, really, right? So given that, it seems like there can be an implementation compromise that hasn't occurred where Microsoft can allow you, like, look, I want the system to be as pure as possible. I want it to not degrade over time. I want to have the security benefits of running mostly just UWP apps or whatever it is, whatever the promise is of Windows 10S. But you know what? I need to run Chrome. Can I just run Chrome? Can we just make that? Can we make that the one? In fact, in my case, explicitly, if you could just run Chrome, and I would give you the rest of it. Windows 10S.
And you know what? That's the one app they will never allow. I bet.
I understand. But you understand the lack of compromise.
I know.
Is what makes this a problem because Windows 10S is a goal. It's not a reality for today. It's,
you know what?
Windows 10S is the future, and we need to get there.
The only way I could see them conceding and allowing Chrome is if schools started saying to them, look, we will actually look at some of these PCs as alternative to Chromebooks, but we need them to run Chrome.
Yeah. Look, we'll run Office 365. We will pay for Office 365. You got to give us Chrome.
Yeah. But I don't know if that will happen, but that's the only way I could ever see it happening. Because, you know, Google's not going to make this a store app, right? Like, there's no way they're going to do that.
No. Chrome is complicated. It's not just that it has its own updater, which is part of the problem. It's that it has its own rendering engine, which is the problem. And of course it does, because that's their, you know, differentiator. That's one of the differentiators. It's a big deal for them. On mobile, it's okay. You know, they have to support the iPhone especially, and so they give it to Apple. Look, fine. We want to sync all our stuff on the back end. We'll use your rendering engine. It's good enough. It's fine. You know, they can't really do that on Windows. And there's no benefit to doing it on Windows. And Windows 10S, you know, like, Windows 10 has 500 million users, supposedly. Windows 10S has 5. Why on earth would they? No, seriously. I mean, why would you go to the engineering effort to maintain yet another version of this thing that runs on a system that no one is using and probably will never use? You know,
it's the Microsoft future of Windows, Paul.
Okay, but I do have ideas about how it is the future of Windows. So
I know.
There has to be these intermediary steps, right?
Yeah.
One of them would be the compromise I just mentioned. This is a brute force approach. Just say, look, screw it. It's a mode. You know, we just let Chrome run. I'm going to let Chrome run. That's it. You know, let Chrome. That's a dumb thing. They'll never do that. Here's an idea. How about taking the container technology you already have, the thing that started with MDOT back in the day with the, I don't know what it was called, the virtualization solution that became AppX, that became AppV, thank you, that became Centennial, that became, you know, Desktop Bridge.
Yeah.
How about you just contain those apps for us automatically? Just let us run the damn apps we want to run, but do it in a way that's secure and reliable and respectful of the system. They could do that right now. They could do that right now.
Could they somehow use the emulator they're going to put in for ARM? No, because that's on ARM, right? So no.
How would they do it right now? I mean, with Hyper-V or something like that? Or
so the technology is, it's actually AppV. It's basically application virtualization, right? So back in the day, Microsoft had two virtualization solutions. One was the thing where you ran like an entire system on top of your desktop.
Right.
So you had the whole desktop and a window.
That's too heavyweight. You want something more container-like.
It's too heavy.
Container-like.
They came up with this thing called AppV. And AppV was a way to run virtualized applications on the host. It's an excellent idea. And so that's actually the technology that went into Centennial, which is now called Desktop Bridge. And so when you run Spotify out of the Windows Store or Evernote out of the Windows Store or
it's containerized. Adobe Photoshop,
they're containerized.
It's an AppV.
So there's a little bit of work to be done. I mean, one of the issues with Windows Store apps is that you can't run your own process for updating the app. You have to let the store update the app. I actually don't think Google would have a problem with that, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I think that's the thing they could give them. Like, they could just do that.
That's how it works in the Macintosh app store.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, the app updates have to go through the store.
In other words,
you don't have a thing that runs
users
at startup.
Users love that because users don't have to worry about it.
It's automatic.
It's auto, and it looks exactly like the OS update. It's just part of the update.
I'll do it right now. You could go to any Windows computer, and you could look at like what's running at startup, right? And 50% of what's running at startup is this crazy baloney that is designed to update the apps you install.
Yeah.
Dropbox, iTunes Helper I have on here. iTunes, why do I have that? actually, I don't have that many on this one. But if you ran, why isn't Chrome? I don't see a Chrome one. Chrome does their own one as well. So they have these special processes that run in the background at startup, and they ping a server at different intervals, and they do their own thing. And sometimes those things go haywire. This was always the problem with Java, with Flash, with various other Adobe products, where they all need their own updaters. And, you know, Microsoft, because they understand the performance impact of that stuff, especially over time, is saying, look, we get updating. Like, let us do that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you can't do that from a Win32 perspective. You have to buy into the store. And so the compromise that they've made to date has been the Centennial thing. You can wrap your app in a container. You just have to, well, there are a bunch of things you have to do. But honestly, for most apps, it's pretty easy. But for complex apps, you have to deal with such things as, well, I have my own manual updater process. How do I handle that? You handle it through the store. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think for most people, and then on the flip side, for most developers, we're talking about things, like, big things like iTunes or Spotify or Chrome or Adobe Photoshop. I mean, even the full version of Photoshop. Those applications are not ever going to be rewritten in UWP from scratch, ever. They're just not going to be. And you just have to accept that reality. It's not happening. Okay. Well, here's the compromise. And the problem with Chrome is they haven't gone far enough on the compromise. They are disallowing the rendering engine. They're saying a UWP app has to use the Edge rendering engine because that's the only one that we've certified will respect all of those precepts of UWP or whatever. And I'm sorry, but that's just, it's not far enough. It's not good enough.
Yeah.
That's all.
All right. It's good. Good point.
Thank you for not gonging me.
Good points.
I thought about it, but I was like, you know what? You're making good points, so I'm going to let it ride.
He's surprisingly lucid for a denim.
He is. After the rum, I don't know. You're still, maybe you should do that every week.
I'm thinking about it.
You can now buy those 10 SPCs for education. It's kind of like the last minute. I think school starts in about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I looked at this list. Aren't these old PCs they were already selling that they are just going to add Windows 10S to?
Feels like there you go. That's crazy. These are brand new computers. Well, they're awesome. They're really nice computers.
What's interesting, they're all $279 or $299, except for the Fujitsu Lifebook, which is $1,000.
I know. What's up with the Lifebook?
By the way, Right. I looked at that one and I thought, well, look at this thing. It's $1,000. This is probably a nice computer. And then you go look at it. You're like, nope. This is a piece of crap. Wow. So I don't know why it's $999, but maybe that was a typo. Well,
it must be a typo because no school's going to. I mean, the Surface Book is what, $1,200?
I know.
$1,299. But yeah. No school's going to buy that.
No.
Surface laptop, yeah.
Yep.
So, and I immediately by the way, put only a Pro on it. I gave up on it.
Oh, so yeah, I was going to say, so with regards to Windows 10S, I've installed it on a Surface Pro. Because we know that Microsoft is, in fact, going to be selling Surface Pro with Windows 10S some point.
They said interesting. Yeah.
So this should be the type of thing that just works. And it does. It works fine. I've not installed it in a VM. A lot of people have done that. I've not installed it on other computers. I suppose it would work on a number of computers.
So that's the one you got from MSDN, the 10S.
Yeah.
You're very industrious for a guy who's drunk on Hummel.
I try to use it a little bit every day. It's kind of like dieting. You know, you try to be good like part of the day.
You build up your resistance,
and then you reward yourself with Win32 apps at the end of the day.
Yum yum. Mm-hmm.
And also filling.
are you doing any Bash shell?
No
coding in the Bash shell. Yeah. So this note, Windows subsystem for Linux WSL will be out of beta, but that's for the fall creators update, right?
That's right. Yeah, and literally from a functional perspective, it's not changing. Although, you know, with the fall creators update, there are changes coming to the product, including the ability to get the different environments from the store.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's that.
SUSE and all those,
But yeah, from an end user perspective, the beta tag is removed, so no big deal there. But what it really means is that you can now get support normally for the thing. Because, like, you know, when it was in beta, it wasn't so much that you were on your own, but you pretty much had to go through the insider program or the feedback hub or whatever. And now you can go through the normal Microsoft support channels.
By the way, I think this very insightful comment from the geek in our chat room, Windows 10S would have a fighting chance if they would just port Mahjong Titans as a UWP app and bundle it with the OS. I think he's got a point there. Yeah. No Mahjong Titans, no Windows 10S for me.
Well, I mean, think about all the stuff you can't run. You can't run Visual Studio on this system, right?
Oh, really? Yeah. A school is going to want that. How about that Minecraft for Education and all that stuff? Can you do that on 10S? You must be able to do that.
You must be able to, right?
Yeah, Minecraft for Windows 10 is a store app.
But the education version, right?
It's going to be a store. I think it's a store.
I think it's got to be. Yeah, it has to be.
Super Dungeon Brothers is. Why wouldn't it be?
The other thing is, you know, it's weird, not to get completely off track here, but I'm in limbo right now because, you know, I'm in the middle of moving. So a lot of my computers are not available to me. Plus now I'm literally away and I have no computers are available to me. But as I use Windows 10S, the thing that occurs to me is I miss Chrome.
Chrome's a big one,
Chrome. I miss Chrome a lot. Like, I miss Chrome to the point where I almost start thinking, like, I could just use Chrome. You know, it's weird. Like, what if there was a laptop? Just bear with me here for a second. That just ran Chrome. Like, that was all it did. Like, that would be kind of interesting. And you could almost picture such a device would be inexpensive, and maybe schools could afford to buy them in mass. And that might be really popular in education, that thing, this Chrome laptop. I know it's ludicrous. like, if you want to stop Chrome from taking over, not just education, but just kind of the mass market, you got to open the door. You got to. Because I think for a lot of people, if the decision comes down to Chrome or no Chrome, I think they're going to choose Chrome.
By the way, Minecraft Education Edition is not available in the store.
It's not?
But is that for the teacher?
Yeah, I don't. That doesn't mean it's not a store app. Like, education can probably sideload store apps. I would be shocked if Microsoft developed.
Me too.
Well, except one thing. I suppose it could run on other versions of Windows. I don't know that one.
It should be able to be run because the main target audience for 10S is education.
Yeah, right? It's got to.
Or they must be working on it or something. I don't know. I can't believe it would not.
And of course, they're consolidating Minecraft as we speak,
right,
so that you know, it works across platforms as well.
Yeah.
I can't find it in the store, but maybe because I'm not a...
No, it doesn't matter if you can find it in the store. Right. I guess the question is...
Is it going to be a...
That's an interesting question. I don't know the answer to that.
See, now I'm sorry that I converted this from 10S. No, I could try it and see.
Yeah. This says that Minecraft Education Edition can be added to the Microsoft Store for Business for distribution. Well, actually, that doesn't mean it's a store app either, does it?
No, here, but I'm looking. I just did a quick search, and I see a headline from 2016. Microsoft will sell Minecraft Education Edition in the Windows Store.
Okay.
So they must have said it at some point.
It's just not. I don't see it.
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't see it because you're not running an education store. Got like it. You're running the
normal store.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not just broadly available. Right. To individuals.
Right.
All right. That would be funny, though.
Yes.
Surface Plus. This is the cell carriers model for buying a Surface.
Yep. Literally, thank you for getting that bit because I was
saying
surprised that nobody else.
I tweeted that this morning. I said they're doing it. Just
that's how I started.
You get a free upgrade and. Yep. So tell us how this works.
Okay. So there's two versions of this program. There's a program called Surface Plus, which Microsoft's aiming at consumers and students. It enables you to get financing starting with a zero APR rate, 24-month payment plan, and there are other payment plans you can use. You can add on, if you want, for extra money, the Microsoft Complete Extended Service Plan. Then there's a program called Surface Plus for Business. And what this is, if you know what Microsoft's membership? Surface Membership Program that we all wrote about a year ago. This is Surface Membership renamed as Surface Plus for Business. Again, right. It's a financing program. They've expanded it a bit and added some new models that you can buy that you can finance and lease through this program, like the Surface Hub 55-inch model is now in there, Surface Laptop.
Yeah, and that's a very expensive, that's a $3,000 machine.
It is.
So it's kind of interesting because you upgrade. Now, can you upgrade after 2 years or is it paid off after 2 years?
It is paid off after two years. Lots of asterisks to this one. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, there are. You can opt, if you always want to be on the most current device after 2 years, you can upgrade automatically to a newer device, right?
So No, I believe you actually have to upgrade it 18 months.
Oh, and it's different for business and consumer.
Right, I'm talking about individuals.
But that's all right. So every 18 months, I mean, in other words, I'm going to be paying the same payment every month for forever.
Okay, but unless
I get the right to get a new computer every 18 months.
That's not a good deal. So, yeah, if you have an iPhone and you want to be in the iPhone upgrade program, and I don't know how other – I think carriers handle this as well for different phones, but Apple has their own program. Every year you can get a new iPhone. And when you do that, you extend your contract out with them for 2 years, right? That makes sense because you're paying for it over 2 years. And if you're 1 year in, you've only paid for 50% of it. But now they're giving you the new phone. So your payments continue. And the payments can change, right? Because you might get a different kind of phone or whatever. But you've now extended it out another 2 years. And so you have to pay that thing off to get out of it. And that would be not upgrading at some point or just paying the bill in full. And so I could be missing something. I want to be clear. But I've looked at the fine print of this. For individuals, it's 0% financing for the first 24 months. Right. But after that, it goes up to 19.99%, which is like credit card sized.
Yeah.
unless I'm missing something, because maybe when you renew, it changes back to zero for two more years. I don't believe it does, though. What that means to me, I think, is that you get the new device for the first 6 months, and then you're tacking on 19.99% for the next remainder of whatever the contract is. So actually, that's not if I'm right about that, that's not a great deal. But if you can't afford a $1,200 to $3,000 Surface bill, which a lot of people can't, but you could afford the $55-ish to, whatever that is, $75 per month over the course of 2 years at 0%, there's no harm in doing this, right? It's a better deal than you would get putting it on a credit card and paying a bit every month by far. Yeah. It's interesting on that note. I could be wrong about this part as well. although I looked, I spent some time looking at this today. Businesses have different, more flexible options for how they pay these things over time, different time periods. I think it's 18, 24, and 30 month. Individuals don't. It's a 24 month period, although you have that 18 month upgrade offer. If this is really a device like a Surface laptop, for example, if this is something you actually think could get you through college, I could kind of imagine someone wanting to spend 3 years paying that off, or even 4 years.
In 18 months, you'll get the newest version.
Well, but even forgetting that, but in other words, like Microsoft says, this thing could get you through college. You're like, okay, well, let me put it on a 4 year plan, and I'll pay $28 a month or whatever that works out to. And that's something you kind of wouldn't notice, you know, in the scheme of, you know, day to day life cost or whatever. And I did do the math. I mean, it is 0%. It works out. If you would go to the Microsoft website and you configure a Surface laptop, Core i5, 8 gigs, 256, it's $12.99. That works out to $54.13 a month. Microsoft's bill, or it's a different company really, but the Surface Plus bill for that same configuration is $54.13. So they're not tacking anything onto it. That's cool. You know, it really is zero. I just think 24 months is tough, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe someone in the chat room even knows this as we speak. But if you upgrade to Surface Laptop 2 in 18 months, and then you get 19.9% interest for the remainder, I guess it would be the remaining 18 months of the contract at that point. Yikes. Like, that's really expensive.
It is.
You know, 20% of 54 is anybody, what is it? It's it's $11 ish, something like that. You know, every month.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
We should also note this is for US only. You have to buy it in a US Microsoft brick and mortar store or online at Microsoft.com. And they haven't said if they plan to extend this beyond the US.
Yeah, this is kind of SOP for Surface. I expect it will.
Yeah.
I expect it will.
You know, over time. You do. Yeah.
I kind of like this.
No, I do too. And I for the same reason I like the cell phone stuff. Like I purchased a Google Pixel through their similar program, and it's 0% financing on the phone. And they actually give you a line of credit.
The same price for the phone.
Yeah. And that one I paid off ahead of time, so I actually don't have that bill anymore. But they actually give you like a line of credit through some bank. And you can buy more stuff through the Google store with this line of credit. But when you do that, it's like 29% interest.
Ooh, wow.
Like, why on earth would anyone use that?
Yeah.
The Apple program is also 0%. But when you buy an iPhone through the iPhone upgrade program, you actually get AppleCare with it. And so I did some people, actually my readers helped me with this part of it. Because if you do the math on the Apple stuff, it works out that a base iPhone 7 is $32.41 a month, but if you paid it, if you paid the $6.49 for that and divided it by 24, it's only $27. So what's the additional $5 a month? It's AppleCare,
right?
And so Apple makes you get the AppleCare,
because
through the iPhone upgrade program.
Otherwise,
no, it's fine. It's perfectly acceptable. Yeah. But the nice thing about all these things, whether it's a Pixel, an iPhone, or this Surface device, is you're literally buying it. You're not leasing it. You know, you're not renting it or whatever. You know, when the 24-month period's over, you've paid for it. It's yours. Right. And you should, I mean, except for the USB 3 thing, USB-C thing, sorry, you should be able to get more than 2 years of use out of these devices, obviously.
Yeah.
So these are, you know, they're high-quality devices. It should last for a while.
By the way, things are clearing up a little bit on the Minecraft for Education thing, because when you buy the education version of 10S, you get a free year subscription to Minecraft for Education. So obviously it must work.
Yeah.
It's a verified app.
Yeah. Although it is a 32-bit download. So I don't know. They figured it out somehow.
Yeah.
Because
we'll have to look into that.
It's a free year with a 10S machine.
It's the Java version contained in a container.
Right.
Sold through the store.
Anyway, right. Yeah, it's Java anyway.
It's the most sophisticated technology known to God. Yep.
So there you have it.
That makes sense.
Yeah. No, I think this is, I don't know of any PC manufacturer that's doing anything like this Surface Plus product.
But you know,
even Apple doesn't do that. They do it with the iPhone. They don't do it with their Macs.
No, right. And by the way, they should do it for the Mac. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I think this kind of thing is really nice because...
Is it a lot? Do you lose money on it? Do you think Microsoft makes money on it? They must. They must.
Why on earth would a lending company... Because it's not Microsoft, offer you 0% financing product at
Microsoft
cost.
Must give them a rebate. Right?
Microsoft has to be.
Sure. Yeah.
Yes. Right. And the rationale there, I think, is that Microsoft is selling these things for some additional amount of money. Because obviously, if someone goes into a Microsoft store and buys a Surface, it doesn't matter if they bought the Microsoft Complete, you know, slash Microsoft's version of AppleCare warranty coverage. You know, they're going to have to support that thing, you know, and to some degree. The answer can't be I bring it in and you say, no, you didn't buy the Microsoft Complete thing. And I think there's a cost to that that's built into the products. And, you know, with this kind of thing, I think they're just offsetting those costs and just giving some subsidy, I guess is the right term,
to this lending company. To improve sales.
I think so.
Right.
Yeah. And, of course, there is the caveat that you have to have the machine in good condition to trade it in for a new machine.
Yeah, just like you would with an iPhone if you were in the iPhone upgrade program or whatever.
Right. Yeah. No more terabyte Surface Books. That's kind of disappointing. I almost always buy a terabyte drive. I don't know why. Maybe I shouldn't.
I never use storage on my computers anymore.
Yeah,
I mean,
overbuying these days. Yeah,
this machine that I'm on right now is actually a computer I've used a lot, and the way I can tell that is I have folders for each month with all my work stuff in it. They sync from OneDrive, and so on this particular computer, I don't know why I'm doing that with my left hand.
Oh, you're so orderly. That's so orderly.
I know. I'm the anti Mary Jo. I actually have.
You are.
I have all of the folders dating back to March around here. So it's March, April, May, June, July, and now August. And then some other folders, obviously. And then I've got a couple of videos and things like that. But this is a rare one for me. So this one has 580 gig free of a terabyte. It actually is a terabyte version. But that's really unusual. And honestly, I could save a bunch of space by not syncing those old work folders because the truth is, this year, I don't think I've ever gone back once to a previous month.
Well,
to find
it's at
an
your
old
discretion.
File.
You roll off as needed, as space is needed. You roll off the old folders.
Yep.
I think that's.
Yep.
I'm going to adopt that. That's pretty darn clever. Not that I do it. But my problem is I don't do any work, so it'd be hard to assign anything to a month.
So here's the truth, and this is actually this is interesting to me because I'm fascinating to myself. But when OneDrive dropped placeholders. I rethought the way that I handled storage and the storage that I synced, and that's why I went to this. In fact, Mary Jo will sort of remember this because I used to ask her questions about how she maintained her documents, in which she kind of doesn't in a way. I mean, she does really, but and so I used to have a very complicated directory structure of things for like Windows or Office 365 or Windows Phone at the time or whatever it was. And that's how it was organized. And based on the conversations I had with Mary Jo, and because Microsoft was getting rid of placeholders, I decided to dump everything in a folder that was just for that month. And so for the month of August, everything that I write, every promo graphic that I create, that's where it gets discarded into August. And when September 1st happens, I create a folder for September, and I move on to September, and that's it. And that stuff just sits up there in OneDrive. And the truth is, I almost never even need to ever access it. But what that does is it prevents me. So a new computer comes down, like I get a new HP laptop to review next month or something. I only sync September, right? So even though I've been creating a different folder for every month of the year, I don't need those folders on that computer. So that computer could have 256. It could have a terabyte of storage. It doesn't matter. I start syncing from the day I got it. And I just sort of forget about it. So this one has – I've just happened to have been running this computer for a long time. It's not been wiped out. So I have several months of folders on there. But that's actually really unusual for me. So it's not because I'm organized. It's because I was forced because of this thing Microsoft did to rethink the way I handle storage and sync. And now this is just the way I work. And so they put it back and now I'm like, I don't even care. I'm not changing this. It just makes sense to me.
So how big is your hard drive?
A terabyte.
Okay.
So this whole conversation was to demonstrate why you don't need so much storage anymore.
No, but I describe this computer as an anomaly.
Like, oh, in other words, okay, okay. So but what would you get from now on? What would you get?
If I were going to buy it, like with my own money, I would buy 256, and that would be too much.
Yeah. So Windows itself is what, about 50? 50 gigs?
Probably something like that. If I look at my folder
for... Think about it. 150 gigs of data is a hell of a lot of data.
It's crazy. I mean,
unless you're putting movies on there, and even then, that's 150 movies.
Yeah. I mean, how many movies do you need? So my data folder for July was less than a gigabyte. My folder for June, because I happen to have it on here like an idiot, is just under a gigabyte. And that's probably pretty consistent. So that's what you're looking at. And it's just not that big, you know?
I have this computer, 256 gig on this Surface laptop. And I have 184 free. And this not only has Windows on it, it has my full documents folder, because I sync that with my Synology.
You sync the whole thing.
So, where you run out on a phone or a computer or anything else is when you start putting movies, music, and pictures on there.
Yeah. And on phones, you know, like what I found on phones is you want to go for as much storage as you can get. I've cheaped out that way, and it's always been a mistake. And it will hit me on a trip like this where I'm taking a bunch of photos, right? Because I'm not really watching movies on my phone. But if you only have like 32 gigs of storage in a phone and you've been using it since last November or whatever, like I have, that thing can fill up with photos very easily. I take a lot of photos. So, you know, it's actually better to – and by the way, I should say, I download podcasts. I download audiobooks. I download music. You know, I use it for stuff. And – that's stuff that used to be on my computer. And I don't need that on my computer. So this terabyte, you know, this is a weird computer because it does have a terabyte. Actually, this is the Surface they're getting rid of now, the Surface Book, to bring that back to the original topic.
People, I think you're right, 256 or even 512 would be if you like.
Yeah.
I don't want to take a chance. So to get back to the story, the terabyte Surface Book may not be.
Well, two caveats to this story. One is that there are two versions of Surface Book. One is the base Surface Book, and one is the Surface Book with performance base. That latter one has a dedicated GPU, and you can still get a terabyte of storage in that one. So if you want a terabyte, you can still buy the nice version of Surface Book, which you're probably going to do anyway, frankly. I mean, who's buying the version without dedicated graphics but with the storage is probably a small audience. The other thing is that computer is almost 2 years old now. And so
I wouldn't buy a Surface Pro Book at all.
Yeah, Surface Pro's been updated, right? This is the last Surface on Skylake. I don't know if you've been following the news, Leo, but there's been some reliability issues with these machines.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the thinking here is that maybe this thing is hitting the end of the line, and that this is part of the phase
out.
Of
they ran out of terabyte. Yeah.
Yeah, they're phasing them out. Yeah.
They've dropped the price a lot. I mean,
I mean, the rumor has continued to be that there's a new Surface Book coming this fall, right? Mm-hmm. We heard that earlier this year. I haven't heard any updated rumor tips on that, it wouldn't be surprising, I don't think.
Nope, it makes sense.
Truthfully.
And that makes sense. They would clear inventory, right?
Yeah.
If they're doing that.
Yeah. So that could indicate that people do buy the terabyte if they can get it.
Yeah, maybe.
Storage. I think more RAM would be more useful than that much storage for most.
By the way, that's the thing. You know, it's interesting you say that, because on the Surface laptop, when I was configuring it for that Surface Plus program to see what the cost was, they don't offer a 16 gig version of that machine with a Core i5.
I know.
To me, the sweet spot is Core i5, because the jump between Core i5 and i7 is very small. 16 gigs of RAM, which is important to me, and 256 storage. You cannot that machine doesn't exist. If you want to get 16 gigs of RAM, you have to buy a Core i7. And once you add the Core i7 and the 16 gigs of RAM together, that becomes a very expensive upgrade. So, yeah, it's just it's... This is the problem with the Microsoft stuff in a way, because they're not like a boutique PC maker, but they don't really have as many configuration options as say like a Dell or an HP.
No,
or a
you know, on the other places you have a customize button, and then you can go one by one through the items and get more RAM or whatever.
Yep. And they have it in some cases on the Microsoft side as well. But if you look at Surface laptop in particular, once you choose Core i5, you're limited to 8 gigs of RAM is it. Well, I guess 4 gigs is an option too. And then on the storage, I don't remember off the top of my head.
Now, this is the same for the Surface Pro, the new Surface Pro. i5, 4 or 8 gigs, 128 or 256 SSD. That's it on the iPhone.
Yeah. So if you want more, like a lot more storage, you have to get, or a lot more RAM, you have to get a Core i7. And just doing that upgrade adds hundreds of dollars
that
to it. And
may then you have to do with which i5 they've chosen, because there are limitations on RAM.
I prefer to blame Microsoft, so I think it would be better if you didn't.
I think you have to get – well, it is still Microsoft's choice. If they're not using that i5 part that can do 16 gigs of RAM, then you know, that's their choice not to offer that. There really is very simple SKUs. I mean, they have 6 SKUs of the Surface Pro, and this is I presume the Pro is their top of the line.
They're no Dell.
They want you to get.
That's what I'm saying.
No.
Yeah.
Or Lenovo. I mean, I figured the hell out of my Lenovo.
Yeah.
You know, I love that.
Yep.
My Lenovo that's going to be running free BSD, that Lenovo.
Oh, God, what? Sorry.
I made a joke. The news. Now, okay, Lou Maresca works at Microsoft. Mm-hmm. I had misunderstood you guys. You were talking about the new Surface Pen.
Yep.
So I got the new Surface Pen is faster, lower latency, and will work on the old Surface devices. Is that right?
It is, yes.
I don't need a newer Surface device to get the advantage of the new Surface Pen, or is that not true?
Okay, so it's largely true. It supports tilt and 4,096 pressure points, whereas the other one did not support tilt and only had 1,024.
Right.
However, to get that capability on a Surface Pro 4, I think a Surface Pro 3 as well, Surface Book, Surface Laptop, I'm not sure, but probably Surface Laptop.
Yeah.
You actually need a firmware update, which may or may not have already occurred.
Okay.
That might already have happened.
Okay.
On the Surface Pro, the new version, those features are enabled automatically. They're there. But you also get an additional bump because Microsoft put custom hardware in that device.
That's
that enables
thing.
Lower okay. latency.
So low latency required. So like my my Surface Studio, which I love, getting the new pen wouldn't get me the new lower latency. That's what I thought that.
You know what? It probably is still lower latency than the original pen or
just
the previous pen,
but
it's still not
as
good as
be.
It would be on the Surface. Right. Yeah,
that makes sense.
It's probably still pretty good.
Yeah. So it would be some improvement. It's not. And now I can get it in new colors.
Yeah, that's pretty much all you need to know there. I mean,
black,
when they announced this,
blue.
What I like about the colors are they Surface Pro only comes in one color, which is magnesium, not platinum. Surface Laptop comes in four colors, three of which match up to the Surface Pen colors, but one of which does not. There's kind of a gold color on the Surface Laptop. I don't remember what they called that, but on Surface Pen, there's a black option for some reason. There's no black Surface device these days. So, you know, consistency, Microsoft's hallmark. When they announced this stuff, they talked about the colored pens. But when the pre-orders went up back in May or June, whenever that was, only platinum was available. And if you buy a Surface Pro today that comes with this pen, you, of course, get the platinum version.
Right.
So as of today, I believe, is it pre-order or pre-order them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was not available before.
I like
that. I think it
burgundy.
Said coming soon.
This is the same burgundy on my Surface Laptop.
Yeah, it's pretty.
$99.
Oh, it has a release date too. I should have said,
August 21st.
So
okay.
It's funny that it says the 21st. I thought the date was the 22nd in the U.S. and that it was the 24th maybe in the U.K. off the top of my head, I thought.
Well, I'm in Botswana, so that's why it's...
yes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Elsewhere in the world, I'm not sure. But yeah, later this month, either way.
Cool.
You can see the sun has set, by the way.
Yeah, you're in the dark. That's okay.
Yeah.
We can't see the bags under your eyes that way. No, I'm just teasing. You don't have any bags under your eyes. Crazy.
He looks very relaxed.
He looks so happy. He looks so chill and just, here I am.
I'm not moving. Everything's fine.
Life is wonderful.
It's good. It's all good.
Yep.
The light a little closer here, maybe.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Now he's in the witness interrogation.
It's like I'm being interrogated.
Yep. Touch cover for the what? iPad? Microsoft? What? Wait a minute. Okay. I'm confused.
This is too crazy, right?
I'm confused. What is this?
Okay. So WinFuture.de, another site that covers Microsoft, found a document on Microsoft's site that's still there, or was as of this morning. And it was just basically a list of devices from Microsoft incorporating lithium batteries. And it was saying, you know, we've verified that we have all our compliance documents in the row for these. So on the list are all the normal things you'd think, like HoloLens and Band and Lumia phones. And then there's this thing that says iPad touch cover.
That's awesome.
And it's got a model number that matches the kind of scheme that they use for Surface model numbers. It says model 1719. And so then it made us all begin to wonder, what if Microsoft was developing a cover for the iPad? Like, why couldn't they? They've developed keyboards in the past that work with Apple products.
Oh, good point. Good point.
So, of course, we've all asked Microsoft, and of course they said no comment. They didn't deny it, which you would think if they wanted to just quash the rumor completely, they'd say, of course we're not doing that. They didn't. They just said, no, we have no comment on rumors and speculation. But the thing that kind of is throwing people off is this says a touch cover. So immediately your mind goes to Surface touch covers. Do you remember those? They came out with the original version of the Surface RT and the original Surface Pro and Surface 3-2, I think. They were a flat piece of glass that you could type on and worked also as a cover for the Surface. I was really excited.
So they were fabric. There was no glass. It was just they were flat. Yeah.
Right. They were flat. They weren't like the type cover with raised keys. I was really excited when they first came out because I thought, oh, this is awesome. It's going to be really light and really easy to use. It was horrible to type on. Yeah. Absolutely horrible. And so Microsoft doesn't even sell them anymore. They don't sell Surface Touch covers. So, you know, the question is, why is this thing called an iPad touch cover? Some people are speculating because maybe it'll have a touchpad built in. You know, there are reasons Microsoft would do this, as crazy as it sounds at first. They want to have a cover for an iPad that has like a Cortana key or Office shortcut keys. I mean, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility.
A keyboard cover makes sense, right?
It does.
The question is the touch. The name touch cover is tough because it's. I think the reason you say glass, by the way, is that the theory about the touch cover was that it's as good or better than typing on the glass of the screen, but the screen the keyboard comes off the screen, so now you have the full screen, and so it should be just as good. But you were right; it was terrible. I think the best case guess here is that this was a touch cover back when they still had touch covers. Like, this is an old thing. This is something they thought about and never did.
Yeah, they could have made a prototype, right?
Yeah, I know it makes sense. Like Apple today sells an iPad Pro that has a connector just like the Surface does for keyboards. So. Mm-hmm. If you were going to make an iPad Pro keyboard today, you would use that technology. And other companies, I think, have done that. I assume other companies have done it other than Apple. The notion that Microsoft would come up with some kind of a Surface, pardon the pun, that's on the cover that allows you to select things on the screen, right? Sort of like a touchpad, is actually very exciting because this is the one limitation of the iPad Pro today. You can type on the keyboard. There are keyboard shortcuts that are pretty cool. But a lot of times you got to go up and select some text or go, you know, whatever it is. And it's awful. It's awful. And the only thing I can think of there is, you know, I'm not saying it's impossible, although iOS as a closed ecosystem would make that very difficult. It would be difficult. And honestly, that kind of capability has to come from the platform maker, meaning Apple, not Microsoft. So, I think the best guess here is this is something they went down a path of maybe making.
Yeah.
Maybe tied to when Microsoft Office came out on the iPad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a few years ago. I don't know. It just doesn't seem, I don't think we're going to see this thing.
It seems too crazy in some ways, but and then you think to yourself, but look at Microsoft these days. They're making tons of things for other companies' platforms, right?
You are literally channeling me right now because what I wrote was something what you just said. It was this is so crazy, it makes no sense. Therefore, Microsoft could be doing it. And the other way to think about it is when you look at Microsoft as a company and where the revenues are coming from today versus where they might be coming from tomorrow, you know, there are Surface fans who would just be freaked out that Microsoft would bring anything from Surface to the iPad. But here's the thing. The Surface business, you know, within Microsoft is very small. It's also very high overhead. It's not profitable. But the future of Microsoft is these cloud services like Office 365. And if you could make Office 365 more viable and more valuable on the iPad, which is a popular hardware platform, that's an inroad against Google Docs and Google G Suite, whatever. It kind of makes sense. You know, it kind of makes sense. And I know that riles people up a little bit. I'm just trying to present it from the viewpoint of Microsoft. I'm not saying it makes sense, but from their perspective, anything that keeps Office as a viable thing moving forward, anything that keeps, you know, Google, you know, pushed off of that platform, actually, that does make sense. Yeah. So I don't know. You know, we can do is speculate and laugh.
Ha ha.
At the craziness of it all.
I know. Yeah.
Microsoft 365 business. It's business time.
It is.
So I didn't ask you the question. So I saw your story today, and yes. I thought, this is really interesting. I have to go back to the source material. Where is the original Microsoft blog post about this? And there isn't any. And this is my theory. That when they announced Microsoft 365, they said that on this date it would become available. Is that why you wrote this?
So there is a blog post on it, and it's on the Office blogs.
Right. I looked there.
Okay.
And it was from today or tomorrow or yesterday.
It was from Microsoft Inspire. That was when it was announced.
Okay. Right. Okay. So in other words, they pre-announced the date.
They did. So they said at the time, but I don't think a lot of people realized it, that this thing wasn't in preview or available yet, the business version of it. So if you recall, Microsoft 365 is a bundle of Windows, Office 365, and some of the Intune type technologies for management and security. The business version is for small and mid-sized businesses. That's what's going into public preview today. There are a couple interesting things to know. The reason I wrote about it was the day is today, and I thought people might have forgotten about Office 365.
I was intrigued that you wrote about this today.
Yep. Microsoft 365, I said. So I just said Office 365. Yep. But there are a couple interesting things I didn't realize when I originally was writing about Microsoft 365. And one is, if you get the business version, and we talked about this on the show before, but I want to make sure people understand it. You don't get Windows 10 with this, right? You get upgrade rights to Windows 10. So if you're running Windows 7 or 8.1, you get the upgrade rights to Windows 10 Creators Update as part of this bundle. Because I had people ask me, "Oh, so I could just use this to license Windows?" Not exactly, right? You have to have Windows to use the business version.
But it's Windows 10 Business, isn't it?
Yes. So the name of the thing that you get when you go Microsoft 365 Business is called Windows 10 Business, and all Windows 10 Business is it's like Pro with a couple more things added to it to kind of bring it up to the level of Windows 10. Enterprise, but it doesn't quite get you all the way to enterprise. It's kind of almost like an interim thing between Pro and Enterprise. And
that's what I want them to do with Windows 10.
I know. The only way you can get Windows 10 Business is if you subscribe to Microsoft 365 Business. There's no other way to get that thing that's called Windows 10 Business. But if you do.
I think this makes tons of sense.
It does.
I really do. Like the cost. If you look at the cost of this, actually, Leah's going over
$20 per user.
$12.50 versus $20. So go down, scroll down the list, and see what you get.
I know.
With in other words, for that additional $7.75 or whatever that is.
Device management, security.
Autopilot deployment is really interesting. That's actually super interesting, and the ability to add Office app deployment to those things.
Yeah. And you get the right to use 5 installs of Windows 10 yeah. on your devices as part of it.
That's
interesting.
That's wow. very
And you get you get to install Office apps, 5 installs of the Office
right.
locally installed apps. It's a very good deal.
So if you're already running Windows machines, even if they're Windows 8 machines, for $20 a month, you got it all, right? This is good. Right.
Yeah. So Office 365 Business Premium is actually something that I pay for. And it's $150 a year or $12.50 a month or whatever. And this one is $20. So it's $240 a month. It's $90 extra a year. So the thing that's interesting about this is I just do this as an individual. Honestly, as an individual, it doesn't make sense to pay that. But I do like the this is the thing I was talking about with Windows 10 S, where they're not doing it there, but they are doing it here. What they're doing here is bringing enterprise functionality down to the masses at what I think are affordable prices, relatively speaking, right? So you're not getting full-blown Azure AD or Active Directory management or whatever, but what you're getting is something that makes sense for those size businesses, which is cloud-based management of all your devices, not just your PCs, but also your mobile phones and so forth. And honestly,
a good deal.
This is so
limited to 300 users. That's how they keep the enterprise.
It is,
But think about the one. We'll just talk about one thing that kind of puts us over the top for a small business. You've created a small business. And obviously, you're trying to grow and you're trying to grow your business and trying to become a bigger business and all that kind of stuff. You have proprietary information that you're sharing over email, over whatever, and you want that stuff to maintain secrecy, to be something that's internal to your company. So that stuff's on your phones, it's on your computers, whatever. So you lose your device or it's stolen. You can remote wipe those things. You can remote wipe them if your employee leaves the company, but only the stuff that's related to your business. It's super smart. Like, this is the type of capability that not that long ago was only available to humongous enterprises that spent tons of money and had dedicated IT staff. And now with this thing, and again, it's $8 extra a month or whatever per user, but you get that capability, and it's the type of thing like a mom and pop shop, you know, roughly speaking, could afford. Like,
well,
it's,
this is gone up against
it's really
G
Suite, exciting,
right? This is
yes.
But of course, it's a lot more than G Suite, which is I think $5 a seat.
Well, it is and it isn't. The MDM stuff, right? I mean, Microsoft positions. Well, see, it's not really clear. Mary Jo kind of alluded to this when she was describing it. Microsoft has something called EMS, which is not this. No. Although this is really a subset of what's in EMS, right?
It's just some of the things in EMS that as a small business you might be interested in. I mean, if you want to deploy EMS as a company, it's pretty involved and there's a lot to it. That's the enterprise mobility and security suite, right?
They still make something called Intune, right? Or I assume they still make.
Okay. Yeah.
So this to me, this is roughly analogous to Intune in the sense that it's cloud based, it's device management. It's not just one kind of device. It's whatever, phones, tablets, PCs, all that kind of stuff. And it provides what I would call MDM capabilities plus other stuff. They probably have document protection services and things like that built in, whatever it is. But there's all this other stuff. I think this is kind of the sweet spot for small businesses, because businesses never stay still. They either die or they grow with it. You know, I mean, the goal is to always move those guys up into a bigger tier, into a more expensive tier, whatever. And just making these capabilities available to this part of the market, I think, is huge.
Yeah,
not that, I don't mean like Google is doing it, but in the Microsoft stack, it's important.
But Google doesn't have the system administration tools. I mean,
they do have basic MDM,
but they don't own the operating system, so they don't. I mean, G Suite, and by the way, G Suite, you probably, that's comparable to this, is $10 a month. So,
well, but remember, so there's two parts to this. So your users will have phones and they'll have computers.
Right.
And if you're going through the G Suite route, and I don't pretend to know a lot about it, but obviously they control the phone part of it, hopefully, if you have an Android phone. If you're one of the businesses that's running a Chromebook, I guess they could control that part of it too. But typically those people will be having Windows PCs. And the G Suite interoperability on Windows PCs is, Not great. I mean, it's hopefully you're running Chrome and you're running, you know, Google Inbox or Gmail in a browser or something like that, and you can take advantage of that stuff that way. But on the Microsoft end, MDM is cross-platform, right? So it works on all devices. It's great. And they've adapted Windows 10 so that Windows 10 can be managed with MDM capabilities. So it's cross-platform. And if you have a Windows 10 PC, which you would, you get the full Office suite and you get more advanced management capabilities. So it's a pretty good, you know, kind of competitive offering.
Yep.
I'm actually thinking
one other thing.
Yeah.
So we use G Suite here, and this is very tempting to me. I think our staff would like it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The only negative is we don't use Windows, and some, you know, about half the office doesn't use Windows.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely all Windows, but
this is geared toward Windows. Windows customers.
Well, you get Office 365. You just wouldn't get all the benefits.
Well, what do you mean? Like on what kind of, like if you had a Mac?
On a Mac, yeah.
Actually, I think this would still work. I believe the Mac is also manageable via MDM these days. And Office apps all come via Office 365.
Yeah, I know we get the Office apps, but I don't know.
You should look
into
that.
It just seems like, one of the things you can mix and match plans. So you might want to have some of your people on this, and then some people on Office 365 by itself without the Windows part, right?
Works on Mac. I bet it does.
Yeah, I think it does. The preview that kicked off today is free. And you just go, if you look up Microsoft 365 Business, you'll go to the page if you search for that. And there's a link there. You can sign up for the preview. When this goes on sale, which is going to be before the end of this year, you're going to have two ways you can buy it. You can either buy it through a Microsoft partner, a cloud solution provider partner, or you can buy it direct from Microsoft if you want to. There will be a way to do that. Go through customer service, register, blah, blah, blah. So it's not like a volume licensing. It's more just buying it directly from Microsoft.
Yeah, and if you are already on Office 365, what is it, Business Premium, which is the $12 whatever per month program, you can preview it for free. So you do have to pay for Office 365, but if you're already doing that and you just want to kind of check it out, you might as well just jump in and look at it. I mean, there's no cost to you for now. So I'm going to do this. I'll probably do it this week, actually.
You've got nothing to do. You're on vacation.
But the benefits of Microsoft 365 are so compelling.
Can do it while you're eating ham. Just sign
That's
up.
That's right. I'm managing my devices while I eat ham in Barcelona. Yep, I'll be a case study.
Yeah, this is it's intriguing. The biggest thing, and this is the hurdle Microsoft has to get over is just the inertia. Once you're already with one solution, as we are with G Suite, there's some inertia. You'd have to offer me something, maybe even a little better than this to get me to put up with that.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, this in the context of their education push, you have to start somewhere. You have to do it, first of all.
Yeah.
There's probably a lot of companies in this case that, you know, maybe are on Office 365, and this is frankly an upsell, which is a great opportunity for them. Right. And then, eventually you do have to start winning over people too. But we've already seen that with Office 365 and G Suite or whatever it was called before, companies or even municipalities or whatever that went the Google route, and then we're like, and then have actually gone back to Microsoft. So that can happen.
Azure is now an AI cloud. Does it mean it's reached sentience?
Finally.
Is it Skynet now?
Skynet achieved.
It is. This was something, you know, when you start connecting dots on a story and you're like, wait, is this related to this? Maybe it is. So remember when Microsoft announced that there was an AI processor that was going to be built into the next HoloLens?
Right.
If you looked at the stories where Microsoft actually talked to reporters about it, they also mentioned that there was something happening where Microsoft was going to make field programmable gate arrays available to developers. And it just kind of threw it in there as an offhanded comment. And I'm like, wait a minute. How are they going to do this, right? So I forgot this, but at Build, Mark Rusinovich did a whole talk there. He's the chief technology officer of Azure, among other hats that he wears. He did a talk about FPGAs and what he called hardware microservices in Azure. So that's what he was talking about. He was talking about someday in Azure, Microsoft was going to find a way to make FPGAs available to developers as part of the Azure platform, and that you'd be able to access them through a service in Azure. So it all sounded very pie in the sky at Build. But then when I went back and looked at these stories that came out a week ago, I'm like, wait, this is saying this is coming next year, like in 2018. So I started looking around and connecting more dots and looking at things. And yes, this is going to happen next year. FPGAs are going to be available to developers on Azure next year in calendar 2018. What makes this the AI cloud, though, is something that I used as the code name of the week a few weeks ago. I said they were working on something called Brainwave at Microsoft. And Brainwave is a way to get distributed neural networks to work on FPGAs in the cloud. And Microsoft was supposed to talk about this at a recent conference they had on campus. And when I went back to look, they had struck all the references to Brainwave from the event. So I went back and kind of looked at this and I'm like, oh, so this is what they're going to do. They're going to make FPGAs available to Azure developers. They're going to add this Brainwave. It's kind of like a framework on top of that. And then they're going to say to customers and developers, hey, you want to use distributed neural networking technology, but you don't have the large data set. You don't have the cloud. You don't have all the parts. We're going to give you all these parts and we're going to give it to you as an Azure service. So this is happening. It's not like, you know, like it's not like way out there. It's like starting to happen next year, which is crazy.
It's time to embrace our robot overlords.
It is pretty much, right? One thing worth mentioning there too, Microsoft's not going to be the first one to deliver FPGAs in the cloud. Amazon actually has a way you can get to FPGAs in the cloud now. Through EC2, but it's, I don't think they've talked about it in the context of deep neural networking. I think they've just talked about if you need FPGA power, here's how you can get it through Amazon.
It's like swimming in a swamp. This is the, like the, when I first heard of what was then called Windows Azure and they tried to explain to me what it meant and I couldn't handle it.
But now look at you. Look at you now. You're like all about Azure.
Well, let me see if allaboutazure.com is taken.
Yeah, you could be my colleague in All Abouts.
I think you would be a better fit for All About Azure, but I see what you're saying.
I'm not doing All About Azure. I'm sorry.
I looked this week at buying allaboutlinux.com. It's for sale.
Oh, that's amazing.
I would let's all get together and buy it.
All about Linux.
How much do they want?
I don't know. I didn't look that deeply into it.
It's the future of Linux today.
I'm going to hover.com right now. People keep saying we should do a Linux podcast. I'm not sure I disagree.
I thought you guys did one.
No, yeah. We do a Floss open source.
Oh yeah, Floss. Yeah.
So it's sort of. I mean, it's that's what I always tell them is, well, we have Floss Weekly.
Yeah.
But.
And you have All About Android.
It works.
All About Android, which is technically about Linux.
In my Linux distribution pick of the week.
In our distro pick of the week.
Yep.
With a beer pick to go with it.
I've been hammering on this thing all week, Leo. It's pretty damn good.
Plenty of beer in the Linux community. Free.
It looks just like the other one that I was using last week.
This other one looks like a little Mary Joey. As well.
Yes.
Shall I let Mary Jo take the Amazon, maybe ready to take on Microsoft in a brand new business?
Any sympathy for me at all?
Does it have to do with the cloud, perhaps?
Yeah. So I don't know if you guys saw this story. It was on CNBC a couple weeks ago, or maybe even just a week ago. They said Amazon has a secret health team working on doing all kinds of things with healthcare and the cloud, like medical records in the cloud, virtual doctor visits, health applications. And the funny thing about this story was it never mentioned Microsoft. The reason that's ironic is Microsoft has more than a decade of working on these exact same things in the cloud. So it was kind of a surprising omission. But I wrote a post just kind of tracing back what Microsoft's been doing in healthcare just for in case people want to know and didn't know, but it was like maybe a decade ago, Microsoft started buying all these healthcare companies. They bought Azixi was one, and Cention was another one. And they started like staffing up with doctors on the staff of Microsoft. And everybody who was a partner in healthcare was kind of like, whoa, what's happening here? Like, Microsoft's going to like start competing with us in the healthcare space. Then they sold it all off and got out of the direct healthcare market. But they stayed in healthcare. And in fact, Health Vault, which is a patient record system, still exists. Microsoft's been doing that for a decade, I think, and working on that. Still continuing to work on it. They've got things going on in their AI and research group around healthcare. They've got a healthcare next effort where they have all kinds of projects about bringing different Microsoft technologies and services to healthcare. And just last week, I think we talked about this, Fitbit skill came out for Cortana. So, you know, they're not just limiting it to their own peripherals, but also working with other ones around healthcare and monitoring your health. What else did I talk about? There is a service still at Microsoft called Microsoft Health, which originally was tied to the Microsoft band. But when Microsoft got out of the band market, they continued with this Microsoft Health service. And the idea of Microsoft Health is it's a service for obtaining fitness and health insights. So it's like an analytics type service for all kinds of devices, not just for Microsoft devices. So if you do hear about Amazon getting into healthcare, just know there is another big Northwest cloud vendor who also is there too.
It's like the company who had a tablet 10 years before the iPad.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I would like to see them, though. I would like to see Amazon get into healthcare, just because I think this would be a very interesting rivalry. And I don't think Google does stuff in this space, or do they? I don't know if either of you guys know.
They had, Google Health, but they discontinued it.
Yeah, they discontinued it, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Actually, this is a big push for Apple, which makes sense because they have devices that can monitor all of your health stuff, and that's kind of a natural fit for them.
By the way, I tried to register allaboutlinux.com. It's not available, but I can get allaboutlinux.mom.
Interesting.
Okay.
I like it. Linuxmom.com.
Yeah. Well, I should see if Linux Mom is available. Allaboutlinux.space. Attorney.
Okay.
What?
Dot engineer.
How about beer?
I bet there is allaboutlinux.beer. Let me look in the food section. Let me see here. Sports, hobbies, and games, arts and culture, food and drink. Yes, allaboutlinux.beer is available. Shall I get that?
Here's the URL you need. It's yearofthedesktop.linux.
That's already been solved, Paul.
Yeah.
Allaboutlinux.bar.coffee, allaboutlinux.fish. That's how about linux.pizza? Allaboutlinux.vodka. There's quite a few available, but not .com, alas. I'm sorry to say. I tried. Skype users on iPhones and Android phones can now, I signed up for this, by the way, can send money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Via PayPal.
That's pretty much all you need to know.
I know.
I guess my only takeaway from this is they didn't call it something with the name PayPal in it, suggesting that they might open it up to other fund transfer services in the future.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I think so. I think they might do that.
Well, that was short. Okay, Xbox.
That's all you need to know.
Yeah, these are all these are little tidbits. This is the stuff, shake that's settled to the bottom of the show.
That's right.
Microsoft delivers smaller Xbox wireless adapters for Windows. And
it's floating in your drink.
Yep.
If you want to use an Xbox wireless controller with Windows, works over Bluetooth. The new versions do, but the better performance is through Microsoft's own proprietary protocol. You may recall that they were going to work with PC makers to integrate that into PCs. And I'm not saying it never happened, but it basically hasn't happened. So what you need is this wireless adapter that plugs into your USB port. So the existing wireless adapter, which I don't have here, but actually, this is not a bad demonstration. This is like a Bose thing. I don't know if you can see it in the dark, but it's about this big. And it's about this flat as well. But what that means is when you plug it into a USB port, it can cover the port next to it, rendering it useless. So what they've done is they come out with a smaller version. So I know, shocker. But it took them roughly 2 years to make that happen. So that's finally available. The other thing they came out with was some new Xbox One wireless controller designs, which I haven't looked at too closely because they've been coming out with all these like special color, you know, combination things, which are kind of cool. But it looks like one of these actually has like a unique kind of grip to it. So I'm going to look at these soon because I have an Elite controller, which has never been updated to the new kind of spec. But mine's actually falling apart because I keep dropping it on the floor. And apparently, when you drop consumer electronics, they break. And every time I drop my controller, the little D-pads fly off and the X thing falls. You know, everything, all the pieces fly off, and now it's starting to come apart.
I'd like to watch that.
It's not good. Yeah, it's bad. It makes a smashing sound, and all the pieces like hit the walls in the corner of the room and stuff. Because you know those things are all designed to come off. You can replace them. Yeah, so, but anyway, mine's falling apart. The other thing that happened in Xbox News this week was that Taco Bell renewed its partnership with Xbox, which I found to be amusing.
Well, what does that mean?
I had forgotten this, but apparently when the original Xbox launched, Microsoft did a very successful promotion with Taco Bell.
You got an Xbox in my chalupa.
Yeah, so they have a $5 box of meat and cheese crap. I don't know what it's called. But apparently when you buy this thing, starting on August 31st.
Hot meat and melted cheese product.
Terrible, whatever it is, chalupa something. Anyway, you have a chance to win an Xbox One S. And Microsoft says that on average they will be awarding a customer of this stuff a new Xbox One X, which is the new one, every 10 minutes. So it might actually be like playing the lottery a little bit. Like you could go to Taco Bell and spend $50 worth of buy $50 worth of whatever that stuff is, and maybe you'll win an Xbox One X. So don't do it yet. It doesn't start until the end of August, but that is coming soon.
Did you see that the Microsoft is updating the Windows console colors? And now I can have red. White on purple.
Oh, I was going to say.
Console.
I customized my Windows console and also PowerShell to my own colors. Yes, anyway.
It's very exciting. I can do bash and I can have purple on orange if I should.
I prefer
so
black
desired.
On light gray.
That's good. That's easy on the eyes. Very attractive.
Yep. It'd be a nice environment to run a text editor of some kind in Mary Jo.
Now, this one baffles me. You say Microsoft's first Windows Hello peripheral is now available. Oh, so Microsoft's never made one, but others have.
Others, if you mean Chinese companies that no one has ever heard of.
Right. Those guys.
Because it is a strange thing, is it not, that Logitech has never come out with a Windows Hello camera, that Microsoft has never come out with a Windows Hello anything.
I did not know that.
It's weird. You got to remember, this technology was announced 2.5 years ago, roughly, became available with the first version of Windows 10 in mid 2015 or whatever year that was. And basically, you needed to buy a new PC that had this stuff built into it to take advantage of it. A couple of small exceptions, but now, finally, Microsoft is.
So, Mary Jo, is this a fingerprint reader on the keyboard, or what is it?
Underneath the keyboard, right? Isn't it?
There's a little fingerprint key. Do I touch it?
But I have not used this, but I had people saying that you had to like go behind the keyboard and touch it. Is that right?
But what would you put a key on there for?
I can't.
No, I know. I thought I'm like the key is there to see you touch it, right?
But I would
assume. In fact, it's called the Microsoft Modern Keyboard with Fingerprint ID.
I like this idea. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you have a PC that doesn't do Windows Hello and it's not Hello compatible and you want to use Hello, you can get this keyboard. And
would you need Windows 10 to do that?
You do need Windows 10. Yes.
Yes.
I love
it. $129.99.
I'd like to see this on Surface devices. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
Do any Surface devices have fingerprint? No.
No.
Hello works with fingerprint because my Lenovo uses it, but
yeah, there's a Microsoft type cover that has a fingerprint reader in it. It came out with the Surface Pro 4, and they never released a new version, but it does work with the new version.
Okay,
Surface Pro.
Yeah,
Is that interesting? You'd think business wanted that, would want that.
You would. And you guys remember at one heck in December last year, I was like going through the sessions that they did in China. And one of the big ones was trying to get OEMs to do Windows Hello peripherals. And right. I think maybe they were waiting like, okay, if Microsoft does one, we'll try doing one. You know,
on the flip side, I think Microsoft was waiting because they were thinking if we come up with one, no one will do it. Yeah. And then a year and a half by, and it was like, guys, seriously, there's like Rompo or something. Right. China makes this thing. Right.
Well, I've seen fingerprint Hello compatible USB fingerprint readers, but that's
But you're not from a company you've ever heard of. Like that's what's weird about
which
it.
Makes
these
it
are
bad.
Really.
Oh, see, look, there's the
video.
Yeah,
you touch it, right? Yeah, I know.
It's a hidden fingerprint sensor. Wait a minute, what's that?
Hidden.
Well, if you want to use it wired.
There's a mouse.
No, it can work wired if you want to do wired.
Yeah, it can.
Let's look at that again.
Woo! They're plugging it. It's not clear, but that's the back of the device when they plug in the cable.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was underneath. Oh, okay, I got it. So it's a wired or wireless keyboard with a hidden fingerprint sensor. That is a very nice, elegant solution. I like that.
It is.
Yeah. That's
so great. One of our listeners on Twitter is saying there is a Logitech Hello camera. Is that right?
I thought there was, but I didn't.
Yeah, okay. But if there is, it's a fairly recent thing. Then. Okay. I mean, because out of the gate, this wasn't the case.
Yeah, it wasn't. Well, so thanks, Rambling Geek.
Rambling Geek. And
I will remind you, I did drink an entire bottle of Havana Club before the show.
Oh, no, it started out as a shot.
Yeah, it's escalated. No.
it's getting more.
I can't carry it home, so it behooves me.
You have to drink it now and smoke those cigars, too.
That's right.
Yep. Microsoft bought my favorite third-party keyboard company for Android, which was SwiftKey.
Right.
And they haven't changed it much. At all.
No. They made the themes free, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. And I guess this is... So, for some reason, this keyboard mentions SwiftKey. Is that... Or is that just a separate thing?
Oh, no. I just mushed them into one story.
You mushed it together. I get it now. Because Microsoft's all in on SwiftKey.
Yeah. They bought SwiftKey, right? Like you just said. So, but you know what? I saw a lot of people not say this, but WordFlow was a Microsoft Garage project, right? So that's an incubation project. And even if it worked really well, which people say it did, once they bought SwiftKey, the writing was kind of on the wall, right? I mean...
So WordFlow, what is WordFlow? Is it the drawing the word on the keyboard?
Yeah, that's where that comes. You got to remember that WordFlow has its origins on Windows Phone, which is why it's near and dear. And actually, to be honest, like that picture on the left where they have that curved one-handed keyboard.
That's a Windows Phone.
Yeah. That has its origins in the Portable Media Center.
Oh, wow.
From 2005, 6, whenever that was, a long time ago.
Yeah.
That style of keyboard Microsoft had over 10 years ago. But that thing is a fairly recent development on mobile or in Windows. I don't know if it ever came to Windows Phone or not, but on mobile, certainly. So, you know, this was Microsoft saying, let's take this technology we developed in-house and bring it to mobile. And they only did it on iOS. And like Mary Jo said, they only did it as a Microsoft Garage project. So, you know, much like Microsoft announced that the production of the IBM Junior is now complete when they killed it. Microsoft announced that production of WordFlow is now complete, and we're not doing it.
Complete's an interesting word in this context.
Cloud Clipboard. I have two words for you. Cloud Clipboard. Cloud Clipboard is a feature that was supposed to be in Fall Creators Update. Now it's slipped past that. But in order for Cloud Clipboard to work, you have to have SwiftKey, right?
Eventually. I don't believe it. Is Cloud Clipboard a feature of SwiftKey today, or is it a feature that's coming in the future?
It's a feature of Windows that's coming, actually.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not there now, right?
Right.
But it makes sense. Right. You can't... Right, so in other words, Microsoft's going to do a Cloud Clipboard feature that relies on a virtual keyboard. Are they going to put that at two or three different keyboards, or are they going to put it in one? Obviously, you got to have one solution that's the best of all worlds, so...
Yeah.
It makes sense. There's no reason to belabor the point. It's like, this. It makes sense for them to just do the one.
But of course, the day that was found out on Twitter, Windows Phone fans were screaming.
All three of them. They're all really upset.
No, and you know, Peter Bright, I think, really loved Workflow too on his iPhone, and he was upset as well.
You know, Microsoft will never get the credit it deserves because every once in a while, Microsoft did something really right. And one of the little things that Microsoft did really right was on its mobile keyboard on Windows Phone, and they did it in Windows 10 as well. If you reach it, you know how if you're going through a forum and it's like type in your name, Paul, type in your last name, throughout, type in your whatever. And then you get down to zip code and you have to type in just numbers. And the forum is coded so that it's only going to take numbers. On right. most mobile keyboards, on iPhone or Android, it brings up the normal keyboard, but you can see the numbers at the top because that, you know, that's all you can type. But the way Microsoft always did it is they had a special version of the keyboard that was only the numbers and a couple of other special characters. And they were arranged in a grid like a phone. Or like any, you know, like a number keyboard. And that makes, like, that's, it's a little thing, but it's like, it makes so much sense. It's like, if you ever try to type in, like, words on, like, a video game console with a controller, and you have, like, the letters are just, like, it's like one long string of letters that go across the screen, and they're in alphabetical order, not in the order you see them on a keyboard. It's really ponderous to type on a keyboard like that, with, especially with a controller. And typing numbers on a normal mobile keyboard is a little bit like that. It's really ponderous. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, again, little thing, but it was part of Workflow, and it was really nice.
And it's Did Microsoft really invent Workflow? Because I first used it on a keyboard program on Android called Swype. S-W-Y-P.
So Workflow, right. So the term word, no, they didn't invent the notion of swiping to create
Swipe
words on
says
it.
They have patents on it, but obviously you can't have strong Microsoft patents since everybody does it.
No, the Workflow, I don't know where the term Workflow comes from. It obviously sounds like that's what it is, but let me backstep. So I believe, this is off the top of my head, but I think the way this worked is Microsoft had virtual keyboard technology, obviously in Windows Mobile back in the day, and then they had it in Windows Phone. And then in Windows Phone, probably 8, they added a feature to the keyboard called Workflow, which added that functionality you're talking about, which was what people think of as swipe.
Draw on the keys, yeah.
Right, you draw on it, you know.
Right.
I think that's where the term comes from. So since that time, we've referred to the Microsoft keyboard as Workflow.
Right.
Even though that's probably not technically the name of it.
Got it.
That is, in fact, just a feature of it that was added at some version of Windows Phone. I think that's how it actually happened. Mm.
All right, time for the back of the book, and we're going to kick things off with Paul Thurrott's tip of the week.
Yeah, so just a reminder, it's August, and what that means is more free games if you're an Xbox Live Gold subscriber through the Games with Gold program. This month isn't super huge for me. I think the big one is actually, this happens a lot, actually. The biggest two for me are both the Xbox 360 games. The one that's available now is called Bayonetta. It's kind of a fighting game. It's pretty great. And then Red Faction is coming at the end of the month. So just, you know, again, I just kind of remind people once the month switches over, Xbox Live Gold members get the game.
You're not a huge fan of Slime Rancher?
So Slime Rancher is a brand new game, and I probably never will be, no.
Okay, just checking.
Yep.
Yeah.
The other one is, it's weird. I've been writing a series of articles about using Windows 10S, and I've been talking about my kind of evolving opinion about whether someone should log into Windows 10 with a Microsoft account. Because the two ways you can do this are, you log in with your account at sign-in time, like when you first boot up the machine. And what that does is it gives you kind of a seamless sign-in to all of the apps and services that are available on the device. And so it's apps like Groove or movies and TV. But it's also experiences like Cortana or OneDrive, right? These are things that it kind of just passes those credentials through. And you also get settings sync and some other advantages. And certainly there are some pros to that. But the way I've been doing things is I actually sign in with a local account, and I only sign into those Microsoft things that I'm actually going to use. And so, for example, I do use OneDrive, which has, you know, gotten a lot
this
better
is
recently.
Not what you told me to do.
Well,
did you change your strategy in the past? Because you told me to use my MSA account.
It's gone back and forth.
Okay.
So I guess as of today, the way I would describe this is I should just add, I'm sorry, if you decide to sign in with a local account.
You have to. You how do you do in, that? First of all, can you?
It's,
is that
it's
an
a
option?
Little yeah, it is an option. Okay. You have to really look at the fine print as you set up Windows 10, but you can do that. Yes. What you lose are two things: settings sync, which is not important to me, but might be important to other people. Right. So I get that. There's only one app in Windows 10 that cannot sync and cannot work with your Microsoft account if you don't sign into Windows 10 with that account, and that app is Edge. And so everything else, like Groove or Movies and TV or OneDrive or Cortana, you can, or the store, you can sign into those things individually. You can just say, I just want to sign into this app and nothing else.
Which is a lot more work because you...
It's actually, so you know what? It actually isn't that much more work, because once you've signed into any app with your Microsoft account,
it's kind of cached there.
Okay. So when you go to sign in, it comes up as a choice.
Right.
It's actually not that bad.
So what's the advantage of using a local account?
It's completely seamless. And so the way I would describe this to people, well, the two advantages. One, it's completely seamless. Well, no, actually, there are three. Completely seamless. You never have to manually sign in again.
Oh.
Microsoft Edge, you get that. So the settings sync, bookmark sync, all that stuff.
Right.
And the third one is just, what is the third one? I just lost it. seamless, settings sync, and Microsoft Edge. Settings sync. Windows 10 settings sync. So in other words, if you have a custom wallpaper.
So these are the advantages of using an MSA account.
Yeah.
What are the advantages of using a local account, as you're recommending? Why would I do that?
So I think that that's the right choice for power users, because I think most people don't want to be automatically signed into stuff just by virtue of the fact that you click on an app. And it kind of comes down to the same mentality when I say, I don't want the camera to sign me in with Windows Hello. Yeah. I want to say, I explicitly say yes when I want to sign in. I don't want
it
happening.
Can you still use Hello if you use a local account?
Yes.
So it'll still say, oh, hi, Leo. I have to say, the reason I like this is I have a very long, complicated Microsoft password, because I don't want anybody to hack that account. But I could, a local password's different. You'd have to have physical access to my machine to take advantage of that. So I don't. Okay. I can use something that's a little easier to type when I want to log in.
You can always make things easier. So to answer your question, I just checked. Yes, you can use Windows Hello if you do not use a Microsoft account. That actually does work fine. You have to configure a PIN. So with a local account, look, the security stuff is always the same. You should have a password. You can set up a PIN. You can use Windows Hello. That makes it more secure.
Right.
You do get two-factor authentication with a Microsoft account. And so I think here's the thing. Like, again, my computers are encrypted. I'm not super worried about people stealing the data off of a computer. Everything I do is synced to the cloud. That is going through two-factor authentication and through my Microsoft account.
Well, frankly, because I use such a long Microsoft password, I tend to use PINs or some other quick way to log in, which is less secure than even a medium-strength password on a local account.
Yeah, so I use Microsoft has made two-factor authentication very easy across the board, including with MSA sign-ins on Windows 10. So that stuff's really nice. I mean, even the first time you sign into the computer, you can say, I'm using an app. The prompt comes up. You accept it. You do whatever the little convolutions are on the phone there. And then it just kind of works, and that's nice. I guess the way I break it down is, for most people – just use an MSA. Like, it's going to work great. It's going to be seamless. Sign through. You trust Microsoft. You know it's going to be good. It's fine. For myself, I don't use Microsoft Groove, and I don't use Movies and TV, and I don't. I run Edge sometimes because I have to, but I don't want that stuff synced across. I don't care if my settings are synced. There are a couple things I do use the store app, right? Because I install things like Adobe Photoshop Elements 15 or whatever. I sign into the store app, but I just want to be signed into that one thing. I don't want it everywhere else. And that's just me. But
Can, after the fact, stop using your Microsoft account to log in.
You can go back and forth as much as you want.
So I could go to my settings and say, hey, I want to log in with a regular, just a local password.
The one thing I'm going to do, because the Fall Creators update is coming out, I need to, in fact, I've kind of let the book languish a little bit because of my moving travails, but I want to re-examine some of this stuff, because I had some advice in the past about if you signed in with a Microsoft account immediately, one of the things that would happen is it would create a user account folder that was kind of gibberish and not like a simple name like Paul, which is what I would want. But it would also immediately attach your computer name to your Microsoft account name. And the computer name that Microsoft gives you is also garbage. And what I want is the opportunity to give my account name as it appears in the file system and my computer name, names that make sense to me. And then I could switch to an MSA.
So I just, went to the control panel, and I said change to a local account. But it does warn you that because I'm encrypting this hard drive, as you do as well, that the recovery key was, and actually this is a good, compelling reason to this. Your recovery key is stored on your Microsoft account. So should your Microsoft, you know, and so this way, you don't have a recovery key. You got to, it's your responsibility to store it. That might be actually a compelling reason to make this switch.
This
if you encrypt your hard drive.
Kind of a side topic to the tip, but if you, the single worst prompt you can ever receive in the course of using a Windows PC is, please enter your BitLocker recovery key.
Yeah,
which can be found, I think, at onedrive.com/BitLocker, or maybe it's BitLocker recovery or something. It's some terrible URL, but it's like this, 2,000 digit long alphanumeric string that you have to get right the first time, and there's no way to copy it to a clipboard and make a correction.
So if I switch to a local account, though, is it no longer on my OneDrive? Is it now my response? That's the implication here. It's not clear. It says the contents of this PC are encrypted to protect your privacy if this PC is lost or stolen. Windows automatically stores your recovery key with your Microsoft account. Before you switch to a local account, you should back up a copy of your recovery key.
Yeah, and you know where you should back that up to
OneDrive.
Is your OneDrive.
Well, in my case, I would probably prefer to back it up to my local cloud.
No, of course. And actually, if you if you try to back it up to OneDrive in the course of that wizard that will appear, it actually won't let you do that.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
I mean, you can copy it there later. Obviously, it's just a text file. But
so
anyway, I guess the point of this is, I have been rethinking this of late,
I just do what you tell me to do. So you know,
in the course of using Windows 10S, I will say this. This is why it came up. If you're using Windows 10S and you've decided I'm sticking with this system, I'm not going to Pro. I'm going to run store apps and web apps, and this is going to be my life. Well, newsflash, you don't have to, but you have to sign in just go all in. At this point, you're going to go in with an MSA. Like there's you have to. You're going to be signing it. You're going to be downloading store apps anyway. Just do it. Like you've bought into the Microsoft ecosystem at that point. So just accept it. You know, the MSA is going to be part of that. So
all right.
I think those guys, the crowd that would want that would be happy with that anyway. It's fine.
Okay. So I'm going to back up my BitLocker key.
Jeez. I have started a process I'm a little nervous about.
Frankly, for me, it's merely that it's such a pain in the butt to enter my Microsoft password.
So
it's so long. I have to go to LastPass and find it, and then I have times had to enter it by hand. It's a pain.
The better thing to do is if you have two-factor authentication set up, but the problem is you're probably using a third-party.
No, I'm using the Microsoft Authenticator because it just sends me it doesn't send me a text. It just pops up a push notification.
So actually, that's awesome. And you can do that when you sign into Windows. So you should never have to enter a password. Even the very first time you go into Windows, you should be able to use that app. Because what you'll see is
there's a dialog. If I use the MSA login.
Yeah, underneath the login, it says use an app instead. Or I'm using, whatever the prompt is. And you can click that, and then it prompts your phone immediately. You don't even have to enter a password.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Okay. And you still can use a password if you don't have your phone.
Of course.
Well, that was a really long tip, but I'm glad you did it.
Let me add one thing to this conversation to make it even longer. Sorry.
Yes. You know. People are leaving. Bob just left.
Yeah, I know. But this stuff is important. I had trouble running a UWP app on Windows 10S, and you may recall, is Rob Bazemore leaving?
Yeah, he's leaving. You drove him
out
of here.
Tell that guy.
He says... Oh, he just closed the door. It's gone. He's gone.
Yeah, sure he did. Slammed in my face. That's where good old Rob. So, I had trouble running a UWP app on Windows 10S. And you may recall, we talked about this one time where you had this problem. And I said, you can go into the settings, apps, find the app, advanced settings, and you can reset the app. And there are actually two levels of doing that. And neither one. And remember, I started to say, so when this doesn't work, and then it did work. And I was like, great. Well, it didn't work for me because that's what happens sometimes. So I decided, well, I'm going to try different things. So one of the things I wanted to try was basically doing like a safe boot type of thing, which is actually a little convoluted to find in Windows 10. You have to do like an advanced setup, reboot, whatever. When you do that on Windows 10S, because it has it's not really BitLocker, but it's kind of like BitLocker Lite, you have to type in your BitLocker recovery key to boot into the system in safe mode.
Ugh.
Yeah, that's brutal.
That is really brutal.
You don't want that.
You don't want that.
No, nobody
wants that. Nobody wants that.
So what you do is you print out that code and you tape it to the bezel on the top of your laptop. It serves two purposes. One, it blocks the webcam, which is super secure. And make sure it says on the front of it, BitLocker recovery code,
yeah,
colon.
Very important. Yeah.
And then whatever the 37 digits are, whatever it is.
Yeah. Holy cow. Holy cow. All right.
Yep. Security. What, do you have a security show yet? Because I could host that too.
That would be fun. You should do that for sure.
Yep.
You do have an app pick.
I do.
Now, is this what you say here true? Because that's exciting.
Yes. So remember, Microsoft announced a couple of months ago that they were going to make most versions, the supported versions of Minecraft, cross-platform, meaning that you on Windows 10 could play with somebody who was on iOS, could play with somebody who was on Android or the Xbox or whatever. And so they've made the first step in this direction this week. They've released beta versions of the new version of Minecraft for both Windows 10, which today is called Minecraft Windows 10 Edition or something, and Minecraft Mobile for Android. So you can actually play cross-platform across those two platforms.
Wow.
They're going to be updating it for Xbox One sometime very soon, and then also for iOS and whatever other platforms are supported. So, yeah, it's happening.
So, for me, because I run my own Minecraft servers, that means finally I can run – I've never been able to access those servers under Pocket Minecraft, so now I can use Minecraft on a –
This is kind of like the holy grail of Minecraft.
It is. Think about it's huge. Yeah.
Not only does Minecraft run on all these different platforms, but it's like different code and they have different capabilities.
Yeah.
And that's all going to end.
You know what's so funny about this, too? What they call this is Better Together, right?
Yes. The same thing that Android uses as its. That's the Google Microsoft Android tag. Better Together.
Well, you know what it was in the old Microsoft days?
What?
Office. That was Office and
it was Windows and Office, and it was kind of a derogatory thing in a way because Microsoft was always like Better Together, and it meant like lock in basically.
Yep.
Wow.
I'm sure it's a playful turn of word for them.
They think all of us remember that are gone, but guys, we're still here.
Yep. I my favorite Microsoft demos of all time were the convoluted Better Together demos where it was just let's use every Microsoft product that's ever been invented together in one scenario where I was like, I need to use Front Page to create like a web page for my new, whatever it is. And I'm going to use Publisher to make paper versions and I'm going to go to Word and I'm going to make, sure you are. I don't think anyone ever did that stuff, but yeah, Better Together.
Yeah. Yep.
We
even have a song for it. This is the Better Together song.
I like that it's an old time. Like we're riding on the train.
Yeah, it sounds like a choo-choo.
A boxcar, yeah.
There's no combination of words I can put on the back of a postcard. No song that I can sing, but I can try for your heart.
Everybody sing.
I'm made out of real things. Like a shoebox of photographs with sepia tone loving.
I don't know what all that stuff
love
is.
Love is the answer, at least, for most of the questions in my heart.
All right, enough.
While we're here and where do we go? It's
time,
so hard.
And there's nothing not romantic and cheerful about it for the Enterprise pick. He's going to sing it. Better when we're together.
It's always better when we're together.
The new Minecraft theme.
Yeah, we'll look for stars and we're together.
All right, that's enough of that.
By the way, except on PlayStation.
I can segue from
those
that,
guys are
too.
Idiots.
Except on PlayStation. It's not Better Together.
Watch this segue.
Yes.
Watch and learn.
Okay, kids.
Speaking of Better Together, the Enterprise pick of the week is Dynamics 365 for Talent.
Wow.
Why is this Better Together? Because this is one of the places where Microsoft is integrating Dynamics with LinkedIn. They're Better Together.
Oh, brilliant, ooh, brilliant.
Guys. So anyway, that is my Enterprise pick, Dynamics 365 for Talent, which is Microsoft's first dedicated human resources app.
Oh, that's
which
interesting.
Is interesting. Yeah. Yes. Microsoft talked about this at Inspire. They were talking about how it was going to be integrated with LinkedIn Recruiter. And now it's available as of a day ago, I think. Generally available now. Speaking of LinkedIn, if you are one of the people who is looking for the LinkedIn app in the Windows 10 store, it should be there now because Microsoft said it was going to be there by the end of July.
Okay.
I heard from people this week that it is there. If you really want that app and you really want to start getting notifications in your activity center from LinkedIn,
Who doesn't?
You shut it off.
That's why I unsubscribed from the newsletter so I could get them in my
guy Paul Thurrott keeps wanting an endorsement. I don't want to even hear about it.
Yeah.
And the code name pick of the week.
Throwback code name. Threshold is the code name of the week.
Oh yeah, I remember.
Which was the original code name for the very first version of Windows 10, which launched 2 years ago as of July 29th.
Wow.
So happy birthday to the original version of Windows 10.
Is it done yet?
Is it done yet? Will it ever be done? You know what's funny? So I went back and looked at when I first wrote about the code name Threshold, 2013.
Wow.
And I wrote a post saying the next major version of Windows is starting to take shape and it will be out around the spring of 2015, which was pretty darn accurate.
Did you ever figure out why they called it Threshold?
Yeah, it's a code name from
Halo.
The code name? Halo.
Is it a Halo? Everything's from Halo.
Yeah.
All right.
Now it's either Halo or Minecraft. Like they're taking a lot of the code names from both.
Yep.
Threshold. Now, we have a choice here. We can go with your Kava pick of the week with Paul Thurrott. Or we can go with your beer pick of the week with Mary Jo Foley. What do you guys want to do?
Well, we should go with the beer pick. I've had
he already picked Old Havana as his rum pick of the week.
Spirit of the week.
I'll just say my one little tidbit about Kava is that there's a thing called champagne, which everyone has heard of, and it's sparkling wine. And you can only call it champagne if it comes from the Champagne region of France because of legal reasons. And so everywhere else in the world makes their own sparkling wine, including other parts of France. And in Spain, that wine is called Cava.
Mm-mm-mm. It is good.
And I usually like it quite a bit, but I got to tell you, I've had it a couple of different times here, and it hasn't been great.
Yeah,
I don't know why. Probably because it didn't have the other stuff from a sangria in it. Am I right? But anyway,
could be.
I don't know. It's been kind of lackluster. So.
Oh, no. Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, if you find a good one, you can make it the Kava pick of the week.
I will try to
do
that.
Still looking. And you know what?
I will research that, Mary Jo. In fact, every day this week, I will endeavor.
Do some work.
Find a delicious Kava for us, maybe for next week.
Okay. But in the interim, we do have a beer pick.
Yes.
So this is a really interesting thing. It brings together many buzzwords into one beer. The name of the beer of the week is Brooklyn Brewing's Kiwis Playhouse.
And,
okay. So what is really interesting besides the play on name is this is an oak-aged beer that's aged on kiwis.
What?
So it's a sour. It tastes like kiwi, but it's oak aged, so there's a little bit of oak, and they aged it on the kiwi. So they actually like have the fruit in the fermenter or whatever, and aged like the beer on the kiwis.
It doesn't
come out green or anything. It came out like the regular color of beer, but it was really really good. And Brooklyn Brewing, it's one of their experimental series beers, but they bottled it, so you do have a chance to find it outside of New York. So if you see it, give it a whirl. Kiwi's Playhouse.
It sounds delicious.
It was good.
Sounds delicious. Well, speaking of delicious, it's time to wrap this thing up.
Actually, that's a good point, Leo. It's 10:40 p.m. here, meaning we're about to go to
dinner. It's dinner time in Barcelona. Oh, yeah, they eat so late. Paul Thurrott is in Barcelona, but normally you'll find him at Thurrott.com. That's the website. And, of course, his books are at LeanPub.com. Mary Jo Foley is at AllAboutMicrosoft.com, her ZDNet blog. And together they are the dynamic duo of Windows reporting. And every Wednesday.
What we were.
Yes. Together
Wait, they are.
We do this every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. If you want to come by, say hi. Will you be in Barcelona again next week, Paul?
I will.
All right. Yep. Good. That'll be fun. And so we will be here as well. If you want to watch live, please do and join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. If you can't watch live, at twit.tv/live. You can get a download audio and video of all of our shows at the website, twit.tv, in this case, twit.tv/WW for Windows Weekly, or subscribe in your favorite podcatcher, and that way you'll get every episode. You won't miss one, and that's an important thing. Begin your Thursdays right. Thank you, Paul. Enjoy your kava. Sure. Thank you, Mary Jo. Enjoy your kiwis. And we will see you next time on Windows Weekly.